And we are live. This is Dark Journalists. Oh, what a fantastic crowd we have out there in the ideas from tonight already. Of course, tonight I'm joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And Olivia, it's game on.
Mm-hmm.
With the announcement of the presidential run by Bobby Kennedy Jr. And his announcement was this week in Boston. On Wednesday, the 19th, there's all kinds of stuff that came out of that that we're going to get to tonight. And we're going to go over the deep state battle against the Kennedys that goes all the way back to the 1950s. But you can kind of chart it from the 1960 election to the 2024 election coming up. And we're going to get into those details for you to show you this progression and give you the idea of how deep that battle goes, and it goes into areas of economics, politics, foreign policy, and aerospace, exotic technology, and general philosophy, interestingly enough, and also the might is right versus moving the culture forward. This is a real clash of the titans that we're looking at. And this is a very special arrangement for 2024 that we have going on. One of the things I want to point out is that, you know, we just did the show last night with Dr. Farrell, and I guess you're getting a lot of good response on that.
We got a sound issue.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Well, I wonder what that could be. Let's take a look here. Keep going.
It just sounds a little echoey. So last night, Masabe 1W says last night was epic. William Macedo says last night's show was mind blowing.
How are you liking me now? You liking me now? I think you're liking me now. They like me. They really like me.
Sounds fine now.
Yeah,
okay. Okay. Everybody refresh again.
All right. Well, I guess we had some fun there. one of the things that makes this important, this whole deep state versus the Kennedys piece, is there's so much information tied up that goes all the way back to 1960. So when we look at that, we have a whole vantage point for us to give that overview of the entire period. Very often in terms of psyops, assassinations and things of this nature, you have these echoes in time, and it takes a long, long time for these things to unravel. So that's going to be a big piece going over this tonight. Another big piece that we're going to cover is some of the stranger things going on in relation to this 2024 piece. So do you want to say those comments again?
Oh, just erase them. Everybody okay. Said basically last night's show with Joseph Farrell was absolutely epic.
Yes.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah, there's an interesting thing with the Farrell episode, which is he got into some of the foundations of his new book, which is all about plasma. And for me, he was doing some of the deepest dives in that book. And one of the things I picked up on was his attention to Tesla in it and some of the really new things he put on the record, because, you know, he has such a record and a background with the Giza Death Star book series that I think one of the main pieces that comes out of it is this whole idea about technology. But this idea of Nikola Tesla kind of bringing that out and studying the ancient technology and then what he did with it and how they repressed that becomes, I think, more and more important as we go. We have a part two on that coming up, of course, for everyone. So stay tuned as well. That goes to a whole thing about subscribers getting that piece. Tonight, we've got the deep state versus the Kennedys. This becomes very important. One of the things I was saying when I was in the echo chamber earlier is that, you know, Bobby Kennedy had his big kickoff event here at Park Plaza in Boston for the 2024 presidential campaign. I was there. And I can tell you it was electric indeed. The speech he gave covered so many interesting points. It went on a good 2 hours at least. There were a lot of fantastic people there, and it was great to meet so many of you. There were a lot of people there from Mr. Kennedy's CHD, the Children's Health Defense. And they were just fantastic people, and so many fans of the show were there. It was great to spend that time with you and right in our backyard. As it were,
And the speech covered a lot. It went from foreign policy. It really focused heavily there. It had environmental policy, and it had the separation of powers in terms of corporate and state power, which was a crucial aspect I think he was bringing forward. And Miss Olivia, you got to listen to the speech. It was pretty powerful.
Oh, it was soaring and specific and exciting and riveting. And I teared up at a few moments.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No question about it. Well, one of the things I think people reacted to, and there were some weird moments too. There was a moment where they try to set off a fire alarm and really, you know, kind of make things chaotic for him. And it was interesting because he figured out what was going on and he said, "Nice try." Mm-hmm. So we had a really kind of an interesting reflection on his personality there. But I think he was showing not only is he a solid thinker, but he's somebody who can present very well. And, you know, there's been talk before about his voice and things like that. Let me tell you, when this guy gives a speech, he is so focused and his voice comes through so strong, there's no mistaking it at all. And that's kind of an interesting thing. Oddly enough, he's one of the best speakers I've ever heard. But he also had a way of putting that audience at ease, which I think is crucial because you need, in order to be able to raise people up, to be able to really relax them with the facts and then kind of put them up into a big political cheer, as it were. So he really concentrated on giving them that. And it's, at times I felt like I was getting a huge essay overview from a professor. It was just, you know, that informative. And when I left, I certainly knew a lot more about where he wanted to take things. What I've been noticing is the hit jobs have been coming out hard and heavy since it started. And this is going to be a big theme of this, which is now they're very much afraid of Bobby Kennedy's presidency, his potential presidency, and his threat to Biden. So one of the things I think that's going to be important is to watch the coverage and how it builds up to 2024 with them trying to really make things safe for Biden. Now, one of the things I pointed out in the show that we did last week was that with Bobby Kennedy, it's interesting. They're trying to remove the New Hampshire primary as the first primary because they know it's largely has that grassroots feel to it and that Bobby Kennedy would trounce Biden under those circumstances, as Bernie did in 2020. Let's not forget, Bernie Sanders beat Biden 38 to 18, 20 points, and Biden was supposed to roll on to 81 million votes, if you want to believe that. But interestingly enough, that trouncing almost eliminated the Biden candidacy, and then Iowa didn't do any better. So he was really sinking down, and it was South Carolina which saved him, and the machine in South Carolina is so geared up for the Democrats of that side that whoever they decide to pick as the nominee, as the person they can really put out there, then that's the way that they're going to go. And so South Carolina is locked in, a beautiful state, but unfortunately on the Democrat side, they really have that political engine locked in. So New Hampshire is a very interesting situation. I have a lot to cover on that tonight because one of the things that's going on with New Hampshire is that they don't want to be, you know, pushed out a month and they don't want to be behind South Carolina. They've been first in the nation primary for as long as the political season's been around. So, you know, this is really, even on the Democrat side, they're saying, no, we're not going to do it. So the DNC went up to these guys and said, look, you don't do it, you don't get any cash. You understand? You understand? And that's the kind of mafia tone that these guys are taking. But they said, well, we'll run the primary anyway without your money. And so now the Biden people said, well, we're going to do it. You're going to have, you have till June to agree or it's ixnay, you know, because they just want to secure the incumbency. Now, there's a big move inside behind the scenes on the Democratic side not to have Biden as the nominee. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But it's fascinating, isn't it, when you think about what they're playing there with New Hampshire. They're playing it safe. They're removing democracy in favor of just Biden coasting, right? That's the way I see it.
They're just rewriting the rules.
Yeah.
You know, nothing new about that.
Exactly. And this is interesting too, because they said, well, guess what? No debates. Well, right now you have two other candidates, Marianne Williamson and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has a lot of followers. So what are you going to do? You know, so for me, that's ridiculous. You're probably going to get more challengers still. So they're just going to have Stepford Biden running away until they can kind of, you know, they'll say, well, you know, we'll run away from those Democratic opponents. And then by the time it gets around to Trump facing off against you, you can always say, well, I refuse to share a stage with that man, because Biden can't think anymore. And we all know it. There's a cognitive problem going on there. Everybody sees it. International people see it. Our own citizens see it. People in the White House. So he's being run by committee. That's not the way we do business in America. And in fact, he should step aside and let someone else run for 2024, even though the Democrats have some of the worst slate of characters that I can imagine for that. It still would be more in keeping with the democracy. Now, this is going to be a huge clash, because New Hampshire will never give up. It's by law they have to hold the primary when they hold it. That's New Hampshire law. So your attempt to change New Hampshire law isn't going to fly with a Republican legislature. Just, it's not going to work, whatever they're trying to do here. So I think what they're planning to do is just bypass the delegates for New Hampshire, because there's no way New Hampshire is going to agree on one hand. And on the other hand, the Biden people will never face off against Bobby Kennedy there, because he's going to trounce them. Now, what can happen is Biden can refuse to participate in New Hampshire and say, well, if you won't protect me, then I won't go, and no money for you from the DNC. But Robert F. Kennedy Jr. can go up there, camp out, can meet every voter in that state, and he can win. They can still hold their primary, and he can still win. And that will send shockwaves through the entire political establishment. That's what we should see happen, and that'll put pressure on that whole Bidenista problem going on there, because this is ridiculous. I mean, that's how you run, you know, foreign governments, which have no idea of constitution. And for me, what Biden is trying to pull is outrageous, and every newspaper should be calling him out for it. But instead, you know, the Boston Globe and all of these newspapers are kissing up to the senile fellow in charge. I do want to go over some of these articles, because they're so unfair and so crazy. Now, when I was there, I talked to a number of people who had been kind of shaken down by the Boston Globe reporters. And the Globe is a big lefty newspaper up here. It's owned by the New York Times. And, you know, but they're still supposed to be, you know, have some journalistic integrity. But apparently there's nothing left. Here's one of their lead writers, Scott Lehi. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s anti-vax 2024 presidential campaign. The subtitle is "His Clown Train Rolls into Boston." Yeah, well, that's really intelligent, huh? His clown train. Jeez. Thanks for being fair, Boston Globe. And you're a Democrat publication? How much of a threat is Bobby to this whole establishment? Well, I think we get a glimpse there. Listen to some of these little pieces, and then I'll show you where they're actually literally losing their minds in real time. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is a special report, and it is Recapturing Camelot. And this is the Kennedys to the Deep State. Here we go. And is it true that Kennedy and his strange, rambling, convoluted conspiracist nearly two-hour announcement did seem to downplay his anti-vaxxism, even as he hinted at vast conspiracies to keep America at war for the betterment of the military-industrial complex profits? Well, what part of that do you as a Democrat writer for the Boston Globe have a problem with? So you like the military-industrial complex spending the money? It just absolutely makes no sense.
They do now.
Yeah. He spoke of government agencies captured by industry and manipulated to promote their economic agenda. Yeah, well, a good reporter should be on top of that, never mind the presidential candidate. Even as he denounced the COVID-19 shutdown as part of a war on the poor, he usually referred to vaccines somewhat antiseptically as pharmaceuticals. But what about the hundreds of, and I swear to God, this guy must have leaned on his keyboard or something. This is a national newspaper. And it writes CWANJDS and all this. I'm going to show you this claptrap. It's all in cap letters.
Look at this. Does his cat walk across? This is a professional writer. Look at this thing. I mean, really strange, right?
Well, where are the editors?
I know.
That's crazy.
So he goes, but what about the hundreds of at the Park Plaza, some of whom had flown all the way from California because they believe he is their unwavering champion. Well, first of all, if this were a normal article, they'd be like, wow, can you believe it? People came from California to see this guy. Instead, they're like, huh. Thus, it was I found myself hoping that this video was just one of those deceptive deepfake doppelgangers the tech experts warn will soon mosey metaphorically and misleadingly among us. But they're talking about this thing that this opponent of Kennedy's had out there. There was like a video out there of every little sort of wrong thing that he'd said in the past 20 years. And, you know, you're going to find those things. And there's a lot of misinformation about it, too, because you can take so many things out of context. I'm going to clear up some of those tonight because I don't like how the Biden people are coming in and doing this. And, definitely Biden's behind this article. But that the traditional people are getting on board with the whole, you know, even if they hate Biden. So there's a little bit, he's like, oh, I've read more about RFK Jr.'s various data distorting obscurantist, that's a new one, obscurantist, anti-vaccine claims and the way they've been roundly refuted by experts as well as other conspiracy theories that have taken root in his mind. Yes. This incredible derelict who actually, you know, reads the actual science. So he's got himself up against quite a battle here, if this is how the media is treating him right off the bat. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. bets on New Hampshire to boost a very unlikely presidential bid. Actually, it's very likely that someone's going to replace Biden, and he has the background and the credentials. So, you know, let's get real. The vaccine skeptic thinks a Granite State strategy will jumpstart a long-shot primary challenge to President Biden. Here they are getting on the side of Biden with the whole New Hampshire strategy of moving it up. And you know what their excuse is? Oh, it's racist to have that primary in New Hampshire. Oh, we can't be so racist. I mean, New Hampshire's been good all this time. Suddenly it's racist to have the primary. Isn't that interesting when we have, Chairman Bidenista, who can't say anything. Stepford Biden goes up to the microphone and they asked him about Easter eggs, if he's going to have more Easter rolls at the White House as a way to kind of like corner him about whether he's running in 2024 or not. And he was like, hubbity bubbity eggs, hubbity bubbity eggs. I mean, this is, you know, if you can't answer a question about the Easter roll, it's time to, you know, turn in your chips. But it was interesting. One of the things that came out of that was he said, well, we won't announce till September. Well, they reversed on that really quickly as soon as Bobby announced here last Wednesday. Now they're going to announce next week, and they're going to try to hoist Stepford Biden in there. This gets to be kind of an interesting approach because they're thinking all hands on deck. We'll take Bobby Kennedy out of this thing because we can't stand the threat going on here in terms of the voting. Now, if Kennedy catches fire, you might see not only a major primary challenger, but if Stepford Biden starts to collapse, you might see them replace him real quickly during this whole process, which could get very interesting because then it's anybody's game. I honestly think that Biden going into this reelection is weaker probably than any candidate since Jimmy Carter in 1980. And we all know what happened there, which is Reagan mopped the floor up with him. But the thing is, there were all kinds of forces around that election, including the fact that during the primary, Ted Kennedy had taken on Carter and had beat him substantially in places like New York and other places and showed just how weak that candidacy is. Now, with the presidency, Carter was able to hang on. In fact, Teddy probably would have done a lot better than Carter did. But he was able to use the DNC and use those little things, because when you get to the convention, all sorts of wild things can happen. Usually a president does not take on a challenger in his own party and win. That's just the fact over history. And if we go back into RF Kennedy Jr.'s dad's campaign in 1968, he was running against LBJ and Eugene McCarthy. Now, LBJ was the incumbent president who decided after a ferocious showing by Kennedy in the polls and after almost being beaten by McCarthy in New Hampshire in the primary to step down. Now, no president, doesn't run for re-election. This was really quite remarkable. So it showed that he knew not only was the wind at Bobby's back, but also that there might be deep state attempts to block Bobby and a number of guns between him and the White House. Interestingly enough, he could not be the recipient of two Kennedy deaths to receive his second round as the presidency. So he stepped down and it became Bobby versus McCarthy. And very quickly in 1968, Bobby picked up all these endorsements, even though his campaign was thrown together very last minute, because originally he was not going to run. But when he saw the disastrous start of 1968 in Vietnam and the disastrous showing of LBJ in New Hampshire, and it was the New Hampshire primary again that became so pivotal, he decided, I'm just going to jump in. You know, the 1960 campaign that he had run for his brother John had been so perfect, and he had run it by going to state, you know, West Virginia, Wisconsin. He had lined up the delegates. He had lined up the voters. He was so letter perfect about all of it. When it came to his own campaign, he just jumped in. But somehow, by winning in California against all the odds, he had taken enough delegates to head right to the nomination. He was going to Chicago, and they were going to have the Chicago convention there. He was going to win in Chicago, and that was going to be it. And it was going to be Bobby Kennedy versus Nixon in 1968. Interestingly enough, they just announced now that they're going to do the Democratic National Convention in, get ready, Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's pretty strange. It's a pretty strange corollary some 55 years later to have the exact same nominating process happen in the same place. And here is the candidate in this case, if he pulls off the primary victories that his dad did, we'll have RFK Jr. facing off against Biden. And, you know, what they did in 1968 is they assassinated Martin Luther King, who was heavily behind Bobby and had endorsed him, which really infuriated. I mean, they should have expected it. But that push of RFK and MLK would have transformed the culture. You would have never had the continuation of the Vietnam War. You wouldn't have had all the problems that you had there going on into the 70s. Now, instead, what happened was they assassinated MLK, and then in June of 1968, they assassinated Bobby right after he won the crucial California primary. So they got into the Chicago 1968 convention, and what happened was it was a huge protest by all the students and everyone else against the Vietnam War, and Mayor Daley was so corrupt that he sent all the cops out like thugs and beat the hell out of everybody. It's one of the bloodiest scenes in American history. Now, out of all that, they nominated Hubert Humphrey, who was a nice guy, but didn't have any charisma. And he'd been kind of browbeaten by LBJ. In fact, LBJ, when he was his VP, LBJ had placed him in the basement after a disagreement. So you go to the basement of the White House, you have to show up every day. Hey, I'm going on to the basement now. So the happy warrior, as they called him. But Humphrey would lose to Nixon, and Nixon would trounce him pretty heavily until the very end, the last week of the campaign. Humphrey suddenly said, oh, I'm going to get us out of Vietnam. And, you know, he picked up some votes there. But as it turned out, you know, things went on from there, and we got Richard Nixon. Now, it's interesting because Nixon had faced off against John Kennedy in 1960 and lost by only 100,000 votes. And it was damn close, and each one pulled out every favor that they could, family, you know, and otherwise. But interestingly enough, in 1968, what you were going to have instead of the resurrection of Nixon was going to be the retaking, the recapturing of Camelot in 1968. That was the first version of it. Then after Bobby died, they looked and they said, well, maybe Ted can pull this off because, you know, he's been in the Senate. He was one of the youngest senators, got in there in 1962 in Boston. And he had shown some signs of being interested in running for president. And then during the moon landing, in fact, the whole Chappaquiddick incident happened. And Teddy, as a result of that, never was viable politically for anything again except to hold on to his Senate seat, because it was a real heavy political scandal that followed him for years. And there's a lot of mysteries around it, of course. By the time he ran in 1980, although he chalked up some heavy wins against Carter, the establishment there just wasn't going to allow Kennedy to re-enter the White House. Now, we haven't had anyone of the Kennedy caliber and the Kennedy family running for president until this. But interestingly enough, RFK Jr. Started to pick up some very heavy-duty, interesting things in terms of themes in public. One of them was in 2014, he went on the Charlie Rose, and it was this, actually, this is from 2012. It's the 2013, the 50th anniversary of the assassination. And he went on and said, actually, you know, there wasn't a lone gunman, and my father didn't believe that, and he didn't believe the Warren Commission. That was the first time a Kennedy had broken that. So this was major, and we knew that big things were happening there. If you flash forward to today, you've got Robert Kennedy Jr. calls out Biden with 2024 White House bid. I'm in a much better position to beat Trump. Now, this is interesting, of course, because there's a lot of things floating around out there about, you know, what would happen if it was Bobby versus Trump. Bobby is the Democratic nominee. Trump is the Republican nominee. Now, Trump, of course, they're trying to indict him. They've done all these foolish things to settle political scores, including the ridiculous Stormy Daniels trial, which every legal expert just thinks is the biggest joke in the world. And I don't know who the bigger public enemy number one is for the deep state. Is it Bobby Kennedy or is it Trump? It's pretty neck and neck. But the idea of both of them coming in to completely decimate and deflate the Biden candidacy is a crucial development, and it's something which we should be dramatically behind, because if we can roll into next summer with Trump as the nominee on the Republican side and Bobby as the nominee on the Democrat side, wow, that's going to change things dramatically, and we'll be in much better shape. And it's interesting because it's coming in from two different sides. So, you know, we talk a lot about unity and all the divisiveness and everything that goes on. And this forms a central core of what RFK Jr. is bringing forward. And I heard him speak in those terms. You know, he wants every American to respect every other American, regardless of viewpoint. Whereas Stepford Biden and that whole group, what they're trying to do is stigmatize the people who don't agree with them. You know, good Americans, MAGA people, it doesn't matter who it is. If they aren't on the same page with them, you know, if you don't believe in every little woke thing that they have going on, then like Justin Trudeau, they want to, you know, say, oh, these people take up room, you know. Yeah, it sounds a little bit like Germany in 1938, doesn't it? Now, interestingly enough, I think what we need to look at with this election coming forward is the background of how we got there, which is why I'm bringing in that 60 and 68 election, because this family has an incredible amount of experience. And I remember when Jack Kennedy, if you look and review that history, when he's running, there's a marvelous story that Tip O'Neill tells where he, you know, LBJ comes to him and says, oh, you know, this boy is running, you know, but when they get to the second ballot, I want you to get around there and vote for me and get behind me. And Tip O'Neill stops him and says, there isn't going to be a second ballot. And LBJ says, well, this boy can't take me on. What are you talking about? And Tip O'Neill says, you don't know the long arm of the Kennedys. And that's in play here, too. There's a lot of family forces there and a political background, you know, ambassadorships, Congress, Senate, the presidency. You know, Bobby Sr. was attorney general. I mean, there's an incredible background. And then, you know, the grandfather, John's dad, Joseph, was ambassador to England. He was in charge of the SEC for FDR. I mean, they have roots. And what the Biden forces have tried to do is kind of, you know, appoint them to positions. So, for example, they have Carolyn now as the ambassador to Japan. They have Patrick as a special envoy to Ireland. And interestingly enough, as soon as Bobby announced Well, then Biden somehow out of the blue got very nostalgic for Ireland. And he said, oh, Patrick has to come along with me for this special trip. And while he's en route, you know, to Ireland, he picks up that phone call and he calls Ethel, Robert's mom. And he says, oh, you know, I know it's your 95th birthday. And I just want to say a big presidential happy birthday to you. And of course, you know, this is very unusual practice for Biden. He hasn't called her before like this. And she's like, well, thank you, Mr. President. And he's like, you know, I just want you to know that Robert Kennedy Sr., he inspired me to go into office. And he goes into this whole routine. So there's a lot of weird manipulative subterfuge going on there with the Bidenistas. And one of the things I think we need to watch out for is him manipulating the Kennedys that are under his control to try to undermine Bobby's candidacy. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. Fantastic to have so many of you here with us. We just had a great night last night with Dr. Joseph Farrell and the Nikola Tesla episode. Really one for the record books, and so many of you were with us. You know, it was funny because I was running the chat for that, and every time I'd go in there, they'd be like, where's Olivia? Where's Olivia? I'm like, I'm Dark Journalist. I'm right here. They're like, Olivia, where's Olivia? We're looking for Olivia. I was like, all right. Tomorrow night, you're going to have some Olivia. And it was funny because, you know, one of the things that Farrell was trying to get across in the episode was because he's looked at all this political aspects as well. And he's really seeing the threat that Bobby is to the political establishment. And also that he's kind of the Democrats' last chance to move that party back to the center because they're so crazy on the left side. They've just gone over. And, you know, for me, it's fascinating talking to people who have a deep history around politics because they all see that the way that things are operating, it's not even like there are political parties anymore because what's going on is part of this global situation and global governance system, and it's just filtering down into these puppets like Trudeau and Biden. It's crucial, in my opinion, that a lot of the people who are organizing that centralization and who were behind the lockdowns and all that kind of unconstitutional activity that we saw not be in charge if we get a UFO threat going on, because we're going to be looking at a serious emergency there. And they're going, you know, they're showing signs. This week there was a major UFO hearing on Capitol Hill. And of course, it was Kirsten Gillibrand. Going to get into that tonight because it plays in, and I keep saying this, the UFO threat side, the UFO disclosure side, and CIA UFO disclosure, which is the false disclosure, are all in play for 2024. And regardless of the candidate, they're going to have to deal with that aspect. And we're going to get either phony CIA disclosure or a lot closer to the real thing. And as far as I'm concerned, I'd like to get us much closer to the real thing. And there's a way to do that because we can bring the whole era of transparency in with the right candidate. So let's see if we can pull that off. Before we go any further, I want to remind you to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. That's a free newsletter, but it keeps us in touch. And it's very important to have that pipeline with all the censorship that's going on. You know, in some of those records that came out, the Twitter files and all that stuff, which come up tonight as well. One of the things that they talked about was de-amplifying voices that they found were, you know, threatening the establishment and their narrative. And this de-amplifying thing, I think, is something that they've done to a series of different people. You know, sometimes you just can't find the people that you're looking for anymore. Well, we see this a lot under unusual circumstances, and this is what they've tried to do with us. But one of the things is we have such an infrastructure that gets around just the traditional social media aspects that that's the key to how we can continue to stay in touch and to really have this kind of powerful back and forth. So make sure you stand up and be counted. Sign up for the newsletter at darkjournalist.com. It's free and it comes once a week. There's not even any heavy marketing in it, but it will let you know about the important shows and events that we have coming up for you, X-series shows, and powerful interviews, stuff that'll just, you know, kind of blow you away that's coming up, and all the incredible events that we'll have coming up later this year, plus documentaries. The whole thing is right there in that newsletter. So take a moment and go ahead and sign up for that. Now, I'm going to jump in, and I'm also going to say here that we're going to take some questions in the second part of the show, maybe for the last half hour or so. And we're going to go about another hour here tonight and get into some of this deep state versus Kennedy action. Before I go any further, Miss Olivia.
Rose Thistle Artwork says RFK Jr. is like an old Dem who loves America. He's so unusual to the America-hating party that they don't recognize what they used to be.
This is it. He's the incredible reminder. And you can see already from, you know, the kind of war-loving Democrats that the neocons have gone in there. The pharmaceutical companies have gone in there and they've remade it into kind of the caricature that the Democrats used to have of the Republican Party. And oddly enough, the Republican Party still has a lot of the Constitution-loving audience, so they play up to that. So they're the ones who are, you know, interestingly enough, when Bobby came out and said, I'm running for president, Fox News covered him, conservative media covered him, alternative media covered him. And the, you know, the Daily Beast and all those freak show liberal, they're not even liberal. I don't even want to use that term. They're captured media agencies. Mm-hmm. And they were just, you know, railing against him because he's against the war machine and he's against the pharmaceutical machine. What are you going to do? So, you know, but we have someone there who is really, I think, with his wife and his family, is going to give these people a run for their money because, you know, he knows what he wants and he, you know, he's been through a lot. That family's been through a lot and he's got his uncle's experience. He's got his dad's experience and they were there at the crucial setup during the 1960s. And, you know, there's those wonderful pictures of him floating around visiting John in the White House. And then, you know, further down the line, there's pictures of him actually campaigning with his dad in 1968. So he knows the whole scene very well. And as an environmental lawyer, chalked up a remarkable record of wins against very huge corporations under extraordinary odds, such as Monsanto and the cases that he's won for farmers against Monsanto, which this is the kind of crucial piece that we need. What you're going to see also is there's a series of articles which are just trying to hit out at the Kennedys, period. So this started early, and I wonder if they weren't on to his run early, because I was reporting at the end of last year, a lot of weird things were showing up, and it was all about Bobby Kennedy killed Marilyn. Remember this? And there were all these books and it was all, you know, phony stuff. And, you know, they were everything that the CIA had done to these people, they were now blaming on Bobby. Isn't that the way to go? Right. So you're an agency, you're a clandestine agency. You take out your own president, then you remove his brother. And then you go around on a PR propaganda campaign for 50 years, trying to get people to believe that they're the bad guys and you're good. So this is the kind of illness that goes on in that agency and why it needs to be scrapped and built from the bottom up. There is no saving that, you know, it's irredeemable because of its history. But the influence that it's having in the media now, they're doing all these Kennedy hit pieces and they're trying to link Kennedy stuff to Trump, which I find interesting, how JFK paved the way for Donald Trump. Kennedy destroyed the old school political power structure and made presidential nominees what they are today, just popularity contests. Huh? Yeah, right. Heaven forbid somebody's actually popular and doesn't walk around like Stepford Biden. So we're seeing a lot of these weird hit jobs. I've got a number of them, about a half dozen there. But there is an interesting little piece in this article that I think is worth exploring, especially in light of the fact that Biden is canceling out of these primaries and trying to move them off, you know, and he's like, hey, we're going to have South Carolina and Michigan instead of New Hampshire and Iowa. And these are places where he know he can control it, you know, and Gretchen Whitmer is, you know, arranging things for him. So the terrible gang is at it. Okay. Any Democratic aspirant, John F. Kennedy said when he announced his presidential candidacy 60 years ago, should be willing to submit to the voters his views, record, and competence in a series of primary contests. Absolutely. Nothing in Kennedy's words would seem strange today. Americans vote for president by first voting for party nominees. But in 1960, his declaration was historic. For more than 120 years, national political conventions, where there were governors, mayors, members of Congress, and their cronies, gathered to negotiate policies and cut deals while knitting together presidential tickets. Without much direct input for the public, primaries had been an innovation of the progressive era, but had remained relatively rare for most of the early 20th century. Interestingly enough, it is Biden who's taking us back to that era and trying to get the party bosses and the DNC to skip the debates, to skip the primaries, and just reelect him and, you know, coronate the king, as it were, like they're going to do with Charles in England, unfortunately, on May 6th. A couple of things that grabbed me about this was the glee in the media about Bobby Kennedy having problems with the social media networks and them taking him down. So on this article, New York Times, Facebook and Instagram remove Robert Kennedy Jr.'s nonprofit for misinformation. The social networking company said that Children's Health Defense, a group led by Mr. Kennedy and anti-vaccine activists, had repeatedly violated its guidelines by spreading medical misinformation. Well, there it is. The crime of taking on the pharmaceutical machine. I guess the New York Times, you know, they know best. Now, they spill the same thing over. You're working with journalists. You're working with politicians. But then what do you have to do? You have to spill that over into entertainment. Trevor Noah blasts Robert Kennedy Jr. for invoking Anne Frank. Noah said anti-vaxxers gathering to hear from Kennedy might have found him leaning too liberal for believing in the Holocaust. So, you know, they're trying to build this case against this guy that because he is questioning the science, which we know is breaking down rapidly around the COVID op and other things, they're trying to say that, you know, he's this kind of wing nut and they're just trying to, take that Democratic audience and say, hey, you know, you don't want to be with this guy because you'll be against us, you know, and you, God forbid that you, don't kowtow to the peer pressure. Now, this is interesting. When we get deeper into what they're up to with this, there's a piece here which is floating around that they're afraid of, but that some people are promoting. And it has to do with the possibility of Kennedy and Trump running together. That is, Trump would select RFK Jr. as his VP when the Biden machine takes down RFK Jr.'s presidency, candidacy. So, in the background, CBS News came forward with an article and they said, Steve Bannon got together with Bobby Kennedy last summer and decided to sow discord and chaos in the Democratic primary for the Democratic candidates in 2024. This is all a Bannon plot. Now, he said he cited three different sources, but they were all anonymous. And so one of the things that I did on his Twitter downline is I said, let me see, Kaklin, Kamala, Hillary Clinton, and Stepford Biden are your three sources. Let me guess. So, they just dreamed up the scenario. Now, what you see whenever you post stuff on social media is you'll see this, ha, you know, Bannon's experiment, no thanks or whatever. And they're just tagging this along. So we're getting a lot of this background and this whole idea that Steve Bannon is somehow behind Bobby Kennedy. Steve Bannon is the guy who ran Breitbart. He ran Trump's campaign victoriously in 2016, and, you know, he ran afoul of the Trumps, in fact, and Trump kind of threw him out of his administration. But they got back together, and he actually helped Trump a lot in 2020, and he's behind him now. The idea of him being behind Bobby Kennedy Jr. is absurd. And it's interesting, though, that this is the meme that they want to get because they can't take on Kennedy on the issues, and this is where it counts. Now, Kennedy wants to pull that military industrial complex out of places like Ukraine. Well, it's a gigantic slush fund and money laundering center for the New World Order. So they don't want him to do that any more than they wanted his dad to pull everyone out of Vietnam. So what is it that they can do? They have to mount this campaign. And they've started attacking really early, which I find interesting. Now, I'm going to go into some of the pieces around this candidacy and see if I can't show the depth of the deep state opposition here in terms of the Kennedy presidency. Let's go back to 1960 and remember John Kennedy's surprise win in 1960 because Nixon was leading in the polls and he was the vice president, so he had the powers of the White House, etc. And they were coming out of a very popular administration in the Eisenhower administration. But Kennedy was beating Nixon in the debates and everything else and came forward and shocked the House hard, but barely squeaked by with a victory because the Nixon machine was strong. And Kennedy was young. He was the youngest presidential candidate and president ever elected, even though the youngest to serve was Teddy Roosevelt, who took over after McKinley got shot. But at 43 years old, you know, after they had Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Eisenhower and Truman in there, this is an old group. So Truman comes in very heavy here because Truman gave Kennedy a lot of advice when he got in there about the CIA, which he had created. Now, Kennedy shocked some of the military-industrial complex like Curtis LeMay and Alan Dulles, who are sacred cows in intel in the military. And he said, I don't want us overthrowing countries. I actually want us to have a reputation as freedom fighters around the world, and especially in Latin America, where all these revolutions are happening, and we've been taking countries out left and right, so like we did with Arbenz in Guatemala and other places. So these people were starting to look at him and say, like, you know, there has to be a way to deal with this guy because we want to go into Cuba, we want to go into Vietnam and all these other places. So when we get to some of the battles that Kennedy went through when he got in office, well, he said, we have a whole new policy. So the things that you've been following and letting the CIA run ramshot over the Constitution, it's not going to go that way. Now, he still wanted to make sure that we had a tough foreign policy, and he at times would play the Cold Warrior. But he tried to negotiate a peace with Nikita Khrushchev, and so on one hand, he's being sort of tempted into war scenarios by Khrushchev and also by his own military industrial intelligence complex. And the Central Intelligence Agency, their entire MO at that point is to go in, overthrow countries or coerce them into working with us, not work with them diplomatically or anything along this line. And the agency started to run away so that by the time that President Kennedy gets into office in 1961, he cannot believe the amount of authority and responsibility for our foreign policy that the CIA have and their lack of reporting up to the president. It actually stuns him, even though he's been around. And he's been around Washington now since 1946, not to mention being in England with his dad, who's the ambassador. And, you know, he's been around the political milieu for two or three decades, but this still shocks him. So we can only imagine that sprawling infrastructure of the CIA growing over these 60 years and why we're sitting in this middle of a situation where everyone, almost on every level, understands there's something wrong fundamentally with what's happening. So an interesting occasion happens, during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, originally, the Bay of Pigs happens, and the CIA comes up with this idea, and they say, you know what? You need to go in to attack Cuba and send U.S. military in there because this plan is starting to fail. And so they try to basically trick him into an invasion, and he doesn't do it. And they're stunned and amazed, but the plot gets found out about the Bay of Pigs, and it's kind of a national disgrace, and he has to take, even though it's only his first couple of months in office, he has to take all this criticism because it fails and all of these exiles are thrown in jails in Castro's jails. Now, the next time around that this happens, again with Cuba, and we know Cuba in the hot zone, there's a much deeper geopolitical reason for some of these things than are in the record books, but we'll take the traditional history for some of those, is when the Soviet Union places nuclear missiles in Cuba, saying, well, this will change the balance of power. Somebody convinced them that this was a good idea. And while they're building it up, some of our overflights have picked up on it. Now, the guy who submits the overflight photos to Kennedy is the same guy who's in charge of all the Project Blue Book photography. And so there's a gigantic crisscross around these events with the UFO file. I want to point that out again and again because it's going to overlap into this battle of Kennedy and the deep state. So Curtis LeMay, who's the general, you know, and he was the guy in World War II, was firebombing Tokyo and all this stuff, real hardcore. Just completely obsessed by war. And an interesting side note about him is he ran as VP for George Wallace's independent ticket in 1968. And they got, you know, something like 12% of the vote or something. And they actually racked up, I think, six Southern states. But LeMay comes to Kennedy and he says to him, you know, as chairman of the Joint Chiefs here, I am giving you instructions that you need to bomb Cuba, you need to bomb these sites before those missiles become active. And Kennedy hears him out. But again, he has that little thing in the back of his head. Oh, yeah, remember these guys? They were the ones who told me that you need to go in for the Bay of Pigs, and they wanted me to invade there. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, and you know the rest. Now, what happens with Kennedy is quite fascinating because he uses a kind of back channel to resolve the crisis. That is, he sends a journalist over from Washington, D.C. to Berlin, who hands a newspaper to someone else who hands it off to Khrushchev, and they communicate in this very unusual way. And it turns out that Khrushchev, to a certain degree, has no ability to back down because of his own military-industrial complex. So here they are, two men sorting through history, trying to make sure a nuclear encounter doesn't happen. Can you imagine that kind of logic applied now to, say, something like Ukraine, for example? There's no peace process going on in Ukraine, and we're actually hurtling towards some kind of nuclear abyss with Russia unless something is done to change the dynamics of that situation. So Kennedy says in back channels to Khrushchev, you know, remove the missiles, and I'll give you a pledge that we're not going to invade Cuba. And you know, otherwise, between your generals and my generals, this is what's going to go down. And so Khrushchev actually hears the sounds of history somehow and realizes, oh, I'm not going to do this, you know, and he pulls the missiles out, which is a gigantic defeat for him and the Soviet Union. Interestingly enough, that will be the action that will make sure that, you know, Khrushchev himself is removed in a couple of years because of the way that he put the missiles in there and then took them out after being discovered. But Kennedy, taking the world during those 13 days from the brink of nuclear war, did something dramatic, and he showed the military-industrial complex that their tactics, what they were going to try to do, would actually set off a nuclear war and the whole bombing raid and all the rest. But it was very close, because at the same time, you have this other group erecting nuclear weapons in your backyard. What are you going to do? So all of the things that come out of this period, you know, like the Manchurian Candidate movie and 7 Days in May, which is all about a COG commander who from Roswell takes over. and, you know, he's got a weak president and he needs to take over. Kennedy was behind helping both of those projects. And this is interesting because I think it really tells us the situation that he was in and how he wanted to communicate that to us. That whole piece he would pass along to Bobby, who was seeing the same exact things go on. And what he was able to communicate to Bobby was, you know, basically we're in a battle to make sure the executive branch doesn't become overtaken by the Central Intelligence Agency and those elements of military intelligence, which just want to start a war. So this was the battle he's engaged in for the 3 years that he's in office. This battle is well remembered by the deep state because it's some of their lowest moments in history. The way that they decide and devolve to deal with it is to assassinate the president. And the Central Intelligence Agency takes the lead. There's an organization inside. I've referred to the organization as X-Protect. It's an aerospace group that deals with the UFO file. And they're directly involved, as we've shown in our documentaries, the X-Protect UFO file assassins. Now, there's enough on the record about that. And then later, all of the strange things around the assassination. For example, the assassin, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald. Well, there are odd things there too, with him, you know, saying, well, you know, I'm going to go work for NASA as soon as I leave Texas and things of this nature. There's a gigantic aerospace fingerprint on all of this, and it needs to be borne in mind as we go into this season of the Kennedys battling against the deep state. There's a history of it. But if Kennedy takes the presidency in 2024, you're going to see his major opponent on the other side. It's not going to be the Republicans. It's going to be this entrenched deep state, which has these aerospace CIA interests. So in that battle, as I said, President Kennedy was assassinated. And the person that he had fired for some of the debacle there in Cuba during the Bay of Pigs was Alan Dulles, who shows up right there. Let's see, there he is. And he's handing the report to LBJ that says, oh, Oswald was alone, a gunman, and all that. Now, all the research has shown that Oswald didn't fire any of the bullets. It may have been under the impression that he was an undercover agent for the CIA trying to block an assassination. Interestingly enough, when you get into the Warren Commission activity as well, they're hell-bent on this lone gunman idea, and they don't want any investigation into the CIA. So Johnson appoints Dulles to control, even though he's been fired by Kennedy now. Now he's on the commission controlling all the intelligence leads to the Warren Commission. And what he does, they actually say it turns into, instead of the Warren Commission for Justice Earl Warren, it turns into the Dulles Commission. He blocks out all those leads and he gets them just looking at, you know, oh, did Oswald have an unhappy childhood and things of this nature. If you go in and look at any of that background around the assassination and the Texas School Book Depository, the links and the history there, the people who own the depository being associated with oil in Texas and Antarctica, you know, Dryhole Byrd owning the Texas School Book Depository and being the cousin of Admiral Richard Byrd. There's so many unusual ties there that Oswald is just walking like a zombie puppet into that situation. And so they're going to create a whole story about a magic bullet that did all this damage. And, you know, oh, all the shots came from behind, even though all the evidence showed the shots came from the front. All these things they would lock down on the American people and make them stupid about it so that they wouldn't realize that the president was assassinated by the Central Intelligence Agency and this group inside that was dealing with secret aerospace tech. Now, years go past, and Robert Kennedy, now the person who's really looked after all of his brother's interests and was the guy who kept everything under wraps. You know, he was the one who Kennedy would come to him and say, this is the situation. And he was kind of the person who would fix everything, you know, go behind the scenes, get those delegates, get this person on our side, get the civil rights thing under control, all the things that John sought Bobby out for to control the situation. And here he, you know, sees that his brother was assassinated by the deep state and he can't do anything about it. He's actually kind of fallen victim to this whole scenario. So he wasn't able to protect him this time out. So there's a whole strange rigmarole where the Democrats want Bobby as vice president for 1964 on Johnson's ticket. And Johnson goes against the grain and he selects Humphrey and he tries to short circuit all kinds of things about Bobby Kennedy. What Bobby Kennedy does is he runs for Senate from New York, where he had a house, and he actually wins. So he quits the job as Attorney General because J. Edgar Hoover has stopped cooperating with him since his brother's death. And Bobby's attitude is that J. Edgar Hoover was actually happy that his brother was assassinated. So Johnson and Hoover and Dulles are back in control, and then Bobby's out. But he becomes the senator from New York, and on his own, he develops an incredible track record in the Senate. And he starts to become very aware of the conditions in the imbalances, you know, the wealth imbalances, racial discrimination, the whole thing. And his candidacy, by the time he goes to 1968, will be remarkably enlightened. You know, he himself has had a great education over the course of these 4 years. And it's a very brave move to take on the president in your own party, as it turns out. So the sequence works out, as I mentioned before, that the primary runs, McCarthy almost beats Johnson, Kennedy gets in, Johnson says, I'm out of here. Now, it's a very unusual move for Johnson, but Johnson was associated with the assassination, and a lot of information has come out about this as well. This is a crucial factor because, you know, there's a tendency in research to say this person did it, that person did it, and all the rest. There's no way that LBJ ever accomplished the entire assassination, but knowing that he was waiting in the wings, that he was the person who would benefit from this, and knowing that he would have to pull certain strings in Texas for this whole thing to come off and for the deep state to be able to usurp the presidency and install someone, there's no way he wasn't aware and on some level participating with the entire thing. So here he is facing off against Bobby Kennedy and tracking him on a regular basis, saying, what is this guy up to? And he has almost kind of a terrified thing about Bobby, like, is Bobby somehow going to unmask me in relation to the assassination? Now, in 1968 and 67, the Garrison trial and the Garrison case is building against Clay Shaw, and the CIA sees that and they interfere with that. A lot of the records that come out of that have been blocked, and some of the central records that we see whenever the JFK files come up, we never get to those records, as a matter of fact, because there's two sets of records that they absolutely will not let out. One of them are the Garrison records, and the other one is all about George Joannides. Both of these have major, major aerospace connections, and it's very important for us to understand that the roots behind some of these groups involve military contractors that deal with aerospace, Lockheed Martin, Boeing. This is where the roots of the assassination lay. Remember the amount of control that these military contractors have, including controlling so much of the data for government agencies, for example. So Garrison, just as a little aside, you know, they made the 1992 movie. Oliver Stone made the movie about him. And then we got this incredible law from Congress that the JFK files would need to be released at a certain point, let's say 25 years. Okay. And it's a law actually on the books. The date came around, the CIA came to Trump in October of 2017 and said, no, you can't do this. And it would threaten the national security and all the rest. Well, as it turned out, Trump let some of the Kennedy records out, but he allowed the CIA to block their share of the records. Something strange has been in the air about those records for a long time. The fact even of the Mar-a-Lago raid, for me, raises the JFK files, and I'll tell you why. I've said on this program that Judge Napolitano, who was friends with President Trump at the time he was in the presidency, had this conversation with him where he said, why don't you release those records? I know that you were planning to. What's going on here? And that Trump said to him, I can't let those records out because of what I've seen in there. Nobody could ever let those records out. So there was some mechanism left in those records. And this is part of the deep state battle against the Kennedys as well. In my opinion, immediately after, this is a fact, immediately after the assassination, Bobby Kennedy gets the CIA director, McCone, to meet him at his farm in Virginia. They have a three-hour meeting. Now, it's my impression that Kennedy put something there on the record, almost like a dead man switch type situation, that said, if you ever take this out, you'll hit so many bells and whistles that will come out as a result of that, that you can never remove this. So something is embedded in the JFK files. Now, originally, a lot of people were saying, well, you know, what's the big deal about the files? They're not going to reveal anything anyway. And I could appreciate that because, of course, the CIA could just alter them. But since hearing the Trump testimony with Napolitano, I've developed a totally different idea, which is there is something in those records, and that's why they've been such a political football for 60 years. And we're going to get into why in a moment here. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is a special report on the deep state versus the Kennedys, and this is the recapturing of Camelot, and in reference to RFK Jr.'s running for president. Something remarkable about his candidacy, his launch speech, and a lot of the things that are going on around his campaign, and the incredible hit jobs coming out of the media. And just to bring everything up to date, in 2023, we're going to get into also, you know, exactly what the stakes are right now, but this history is important. We're going to be taking your questions shortly here, and we'll go about another 30, 40 minutes, if that sounds good. How are you doing over there?
Good. Joshica's Doggy Woggy wants to know, does Daniel think that RFK Jr. will declassify the JFK file, or will he pull what Trump did?
No. I believe he, this is a guy who's all about transparency, and he does not weigh political costs for things. I think we're pretty clear about that. This is somebody who's a dynamic individual with a lot of grit. You know, he has a lot of fortitude and an ethical backbone. So it's important to for him, and he's the candidate who's come out and said, you know, the CIA assassinated my father and my uncle. That's important because the family had not been able to do that before. And I'm sure it lived in fear of dealing with that as well. Because, you know, it is an incredible burden to carry, and we can only imagine. And for somebody, you know, like Jackie, for example, she must have been very aware of the stakes for her children, like John Jr. and Caroline. John Jr. and the things that, you know, the things that happened with him that short-circuited any kind of political career that he would have because of the plane crash, you know, it's another kind of assassination. It's a preemptive assassination, as it were. But I think that there's enough around that case that it shows you something, you know, not right about the story of that plane crash. And if you go into it, as I have with different researchers, it becomes pretty obvious. And as to why they preemptively did it at that moment, there's a few different theories, one of them including the fact that John may have run for Senate in New York, and they had plans for Hillary when she left the White House to, you know, leapfrog from First Lady to Senator of New York. That's one. The other is that his own pursuit of the truth about his father's death may have been one of the core parts. It's a tragedy in any case, regardless of the reason. I want to go back to the CIA for a moment. One of the things that Robert Kennedy Jr. has enlightened us about is, I'm just going to call him Bobby from here on out. That's what he likes to be called. One of the things Bobby enlightened us about is that he told us the original problem that started with his family and the Central Intelligence Agency. And it goes back to a period where his grandfather, Joseph, is on these different committees giving testimony about looking over what the intelligence agencies are doing very early on now, right after they're created. They're created in 47 with the National Security Act, given a big boost in 49 with the CIA Act. Then, you know, he's one of the early people who's in opposition to all the powers that they have. So right off the bat, they're looking at the Kennedys and thinking, this is a problem. Now, they were probably also very leery of them beforehand. And there's a lot of testimony also about the fact, if you look at that setup, it's a very interesting progression because Joe wanted the presidency himself. He had a lot to prove. And he felt like an oppressed minority, as he was as an Irishman. And he saw all the incredible prejudice against Irish people. And we have to remember that that goes back all the way to the 19th century. And you know, the fact that there was slavery also, there was a slave trade that involved the Irish. And so Joseph had so much to prove, and he, you know, got himself an incredible stature and, you know, incredible political dynastic wife and raised this incredible family. And then he becomes an incredible stock market baron and business raider and everything else. So, you know, it's FDR really notices the stuff that he's done and says, how would you like to head up the SEC for me? And people go to FDR and they say, why on earth would you want this guy who basically, you know, looted things left and right during the whole stock market boom of the 20s? You know, he may have done it legally, but this guy was behind every kind of, you know, stock movement that was going on that was shady. And FDR leaned over and said, you know, you basically elect the top rat to keep an eye on all the other rats in terms of Wall Street. So that's what he thought about Joseph Kennedy. I think it's interesting. He also knew that Kennedy wanted to run for president, and FDR didn't intend to ever give up the job until he was dead. And he would, in fact, win an unprecedented four terms, which no president has ever done. Now, you know, so Kennedy serves in government, and then to keep him happy, FDR is like, how would you like to be my ambassador to the UK? And he goes over there with his family. And so the family gets that incredible education. And think about this, you know, this is about JFK is about 20, in his early 20s. And he's over there and he's picking up all of these things about how the English do government. And Robert's very young, you know, the whole family's over there. And so a number of things happen, then World War II hits. And what happens is the brother, Joseph, the older brother of John, is the one that the father is putting all of his eggs in that basket. He wants him to run for president because even though he plans to do it himself, what happens is he gives a very unfortunate interview to a reporter for the New York Times where he says, you know, it looks like fascism is inevitable and we just better learn how to negotiate with it. And he's called an appeaser and all this kind of stuff. And it's interesting that somebody as deft politically as Joe Kennedy could have allowed himself to do that, but that's what happened. And as a result, FDR says, well, I'm going to recall you from the UK. How's that? And so Joe's like, all right, I've blown it, but my son's going to do it. You know, I'm going to have Joe Kennedy Jr. do it. And Joe Kennedy Jr. is prepped for this role, and he's very dynamic, and he's much more into running for president than John ever was. John thinks of himself as a journalist, and he's kind of shy and almost a shut-in, which is kind of wild when you really go through that history. But he has a totally different vision for his life. So they put Joe on a special mission, and while he's delivering these explosives to Germany, the plane blows up, which is an incredible Kennedy tragedy. You know, is that something that was where they knew that what was going on and they got rid of Joe? We just won't know. But John is the one who steps up to the plate, and he takes over the mantle, and the father turns to him and says, you know, you're the one who's going to be the big politician. So what we're getting with John Kennedy is he is the kind of full vision of his father's dream of becoming president. And so John Kennedy rolls into this, and he becomes a congressman in 1946 in Boston. And some of his girlfriends from this period say that he tells them very certainly that he's going to be president. So, did you know I'm going to be president? So he already knows in this 1946, 1947 period. One of the things that happens to him before he does this is he goes over to look at the ruins of post-war Berlin with the first defense secretary of the United States, his friend, James Forrestal, fellow Catholic. Forrestal becomes someone crucial in the UFO file story because he is somebody who gets the depth of the evidence after the Roswell case and these other cases and decides, you know, we really should be sharing this stuff with the world. And then he ends up getting thrown out of a window at Bethesda Hospital. So Kennedy has this early setup with Forrestal. What he shared with Kennedy, we don't exactly know. But again, there's an interesting piece here because Kennedy goes into the presidency with a certain knowledge of the UFO file. President Trump, from his uncle John Trump, you know, and this is an interesting thing. I mentioned recently that he went on Tucker Carlson and starts talking about Uncle John and Tesla and all these things. Well, you know, he didn't actually mention Tesla, but Uncle John is the crossover for Tesla because Uncle John was called in by Vannevar Bush to get Tesla's papers in 1943 after he died because the FBI were looking for information about a weapon. Now, this is very interesting because John Trump has this extra information, this extra piece. John F. Kennedy, through Forrestal, has this extra piece, and it's around the UFO file. Both of them, when they get into positions of power, have incredible opposition inside. The kind of opposition that makes you think, huh, you know, like, sure, there's always party opposition to people like Bush or Clinton or whoever, but this opposition is beyond anything. It's like they can't tolerate the fact that these other people are in power with them. And this is the kind of the heart of the exotic technology piece that's in the middle of all these battles. And if we get our heads wrapped around that, we're starting to get closer to what the battle is really all about. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report, going deep here tonight on the deep state battle with the Kennedys and recapturing Camelot. Can he do it? Can Bobby Jr. pull it off? Well, he was sounding very much like a president when he was speaking in Boston this past week. And I was lucky enough to be there. Everyone who was there just felt like the speech was electric, I guess, except for this bozo Boston Globe reporter who can't even write. Now, one of the things that happened there in Kennedy's presidency, as I mentioned, was that a lot of the advice he was getting about the CIA was from the man who created it, and that was Harry Truman. So Truman is saying to him, listen, don't listen to these guys. You know, they'll tell you one thing and do another. And really what you need to be doing is developing a whole new approach with them. Now, I want to point out something that Professor Scott taught me, and it's not something that's widely known or brought up around the Central Intelligence Agency, but the CIA was created originally after they got rid of the OSS during the war, the Office of Strategic Services, which was an intel branch. And so they created the Central Intelligence Group. But then they were like, well, let's have an agency really develop the whole thing. And Truman was absolutely against it. At every turn, he said, it's an American Gestapo, no way. But he's talked into it. And he says, well, you're going to give the, you know, intelligence directly to the president. Now, there's a group in there that is around at the same time, and they're called the Office of Policy Coordination, OPC. Frank Wisner, all these guys who have really done the wild and crazy things during the war. And they go into this pose where they start to sabotage elections overseas. You know, we have a lot at stake, you know, in the Italian elections, the communists can't take over and all this stuff. So they think that they have a blank check to do anything that they want. And this OPC becomes so radical and starts doing all these covert operations that Truman calls in the Central Intelligence Agency and says, you got to stop these people because they're doing things that are completely outside of their purview, and I haven't sanctioned any of it. Get them under your umbrella, get them under control. What happens is that branch of the OPC inside of the intelligence community, instead of being taken under control by the Central Intelligence Agency, they take over. So this is the nature of the problem and why it becomes an extra constitutional agency. They're already thinking in this lawless fashion. The other thing that needs to be understood is that even though it's set up initially under the idea of some kind of military protocol and feeding intelligence back to the president, what happens is it's set up in a New York law firm that deals with international finance, Sullivan and Cromwell. So, and Dulles is the one who really is crucial to setting it up and will be its director from 53 to 61 until Kennedy fires him. This is the pipeline of international finance directly through, you know, high finance, Wall Street, New York. And so that becomes a weird piece of all of this military intelligence gathering. Suddenly it has a purpose which crisscrosses with the Wall Street interests and the international finance around this law firm. So that was also another big miss there. And what happens is through that power of the government, one of the things that happens in the background there is they part of the CIA ledger in the background is that, you know, they're given this mandate that no matter what they do, they can't be prosecuted. This is also completely extra constitutional. It was never envisioned by the founding fathers. And it was only thought of as a way to deal with extraordinary circumstances. One, the UFO file, and two, the atomic weapons program. And they figured they needed something that was so secret and so outside the bounds of the law. But what happened was just like the continuity of government program, which built underground bunkers to survive a nuclear war, it starts to act like its own government. And by the time you get into the clash with Kennedy in the 60s, the early 60s, you have just a battle between the executive branch and this thing. And the Central Intelligence Agency is informed by the fact that they've been extra constitutional since their inception. And so, you know, they've gone around the world, they've changed situations. They've overthrown governments in Iran. They've overthrown governments in Guatemala. They have their own air force. So they're starting to operate as their own arm of the government. And over again, when Kennedy gets in, he says, I can't believe these CIA bastards did this. I can't believe these CIA bastards did that. They're just operating on their own agenda. So part of the attempts that he makes in his own presidency are executive orders aimed at giving some of their paramilitary duties back to the Joint Chiefs and the military. This is how he tries to navigate what they're doing, but he's blocked over and over again. And it's a very difficult situation all the way through those 3 years. The UFO file piece is crucial, and it's missed. It's missed by deep state historians. It's missed by political figures. And it's even missed by the UFO researchers who, when really important information along this track comes up, they don't know what to deal with it. So it's a fundamental gap in everyone's knowledge when we're dealing with these types of situations, which is why it's so crucial, because it's going to be on the table in 2024. And so any political candidate who's in there needs to understand this information and needs to navigate it correctly. So what happens is Truman gives Kennedy that information, and he gives him that advice about the CIA. When Kennedy is assassinated, Truman is furious because instantly he recognizes the fingerprints of who was up to it. Because remember, he created the CIA. He knows what's going on there. Not only that, he created our response to the UFO file. He was in office during the Roswell incident, and he was also senator in Missouri during the incredible crash that happens in 1941, the earliest. So he knows what's gone on here, and he knows the people that he's been dealing with. So he writes a month to the day of the assassination, an op-ed in the Washington Post, Harry S. Truman, Limit CIA Role to Intelligence. This is such a crucial document, and It's often overlooked by historians, but it's on the record. And by the second version of the Post for that day, because they used to put out two newspapers a day, it's taken out at the CIA request. The night that Truman writes this whole op-ed, Alan Dulles, the fired CIA director, who's about to become the director of the Warren Commission, goes to visit him in Missouri. And he says, you have to retract this. You have to literally write a retraction. You can't, you know, expose our forces to this danger. And by the way, you're taking a lot on yourself by doing this. And Truman, according to his own aides, responds and says, you can't threaten me. I'm old. And Dulles can't believe it. So what he does is he goes back and he gives an interview saying that the faculties, you know, good old Harry has Alzheimer's. And so don't believe anything that he says. That's the way that they dealt with it. But I want to read you a few things from his op-ed that I think give us some clear idea of what the Kennedys were up against. And unfortunately, the bloated version of what they were up against then is the same thing we're facing off against for the 2024 election. Everyone, thank you for being here for this special report. We're going to take your questions here shortly, and we'll try to go with you for a little longer. Okay. How are you doing over there?
Doing great.
How's it going?
Tons of questions. I think we're going to have a long Q&A section.
All right. Sounds good to me. Quote, I think it's become necessary to take another look at the purpose and operation of our Central Intelligence Agency, CIA. At least I'd like to submit here the original reason why I thought it necessary to organize the agency during my administration, what I expected to do, and how it was to operate as an arm of the president. I think it's fairly obvious that by and large, a president's performance in office is as effective as the information he has and the information he gets. Every president has available to him all the information gathered by many intelligence agencies already in existence, the Department of State, and he goes on. Their collective information reached the president all too frequently in conflicting conclusions. At times, intelligence reports tended to be slanted to conform to established positions of a given department. This becomes confusing, and what's worse, such intelligence is of little use to a president in reaching the right decisions. Therefore, I decided to set up a special organization charged with the collection of all intelligence reports from every available source and to have those reports reach me as president without a department treatment. I wanted and needed the information in its natural, raw state and in as comprehensive a volume as it was practical for me to make full use of it. But the most important thing about this move was to guard against the chance of intelligence being tied or used to influence or to lead the president into unwise decisions. And I thought it was necessary that the president do his own thinking and evaluating. Since the responsibility for decision-making was his, then he had to be sure that no information was kept from him for whatever reason at the discretion of any one department or agency. Those who want to shield a president from bad news or misjudgments or spare him from being upset. For some time, I've been disturbed by the way the CIA has been diverted from its original assignment. It has become an operational and at times a policy-making arm of the government. It's completely unconstitutional. This has led to trouble and may have compounded our difficulties in several explosive areas. I never had any thought when I set up the CIA that it would be injected into peacetime cloak and dagger operations. Some of the complications and embarrassment I think we've experienced are in part attributable to the fact that this quiet intelligence arm of the president has been so removed from its intended role that it's being intercepted and interpreted as a symbol of sinister and mysterious foreign intrigue, a subject for Cold War enemy propaganda. With all the nonsense put out by communist propaganda about Yankee imperialism in their name-calling assault on the West, the last thing we needed was for the CIA to be seized upon as something akin to subverting influence in the affairs of other people. I well knew the first temporary director of the CIA, Admiral Sowers, and later permanent directors, Hoyt Vandenberg, who, by the way, managed the UFO file. But there are some searching questions that need to be answered. I therefore would like to see the CIA be restored to its original assignment, the intelligence arm of the president, that whatever else it can properly perform in that special field, and that its operational duties be terminated or properly used elsewhere. We have grown up as a nation respected for our free institutions and for our ability to maintain a free and open society. There is something about the way the CIA has been functioning that is casting a shadow over our historic position, and I feel that we need to correct it now. Now, it's basically mend it or end it. and he's saying something weird going on about how this thing is functioning and is totally different from what I set up. So whatever it is now, it's a Frankenstein. This is Truman's attitude by the time the Kennedy assassination happens, and he releases the op-ed, as I said, a month to the day. Now, one of the things that I've pointed out, which ufology researchers on one hand and deep state researchers on the other have let fall fallow to the ground with no follow-up, but it's crucial, is the testimony of Watergate lawyer Douglas Caddy to me in our interview that his friend, E. Howard Hunt, told him in private, not for public dissemination, but they were very close friends, that Kennedy had been assassinated over the UFO file. Now, again, Caddy had been the Watergate lawyer, is a historical figure, long distinguished career. He put this on the record about E. Howard Hunt. E. Howard Hunt was caught up in the Watergate burglary. He was the top CIA super spy for decades. So this is what he communicated in private. So there, with all the information that we have about JFK and the UFO file, we have a very, very high-level historical figure giving us the information of somebody who would know on the inside. So he has placed it, in fact, on the record that Kennedy wanted to, and it's something I've investigated, go in the background and investigate and share our information of the UFO file with the Russians, with the idea that a nuclear incident could be avoided. And in my opinion, he also wanted to further that further to UFO disclosure for the mass public. That's also a gigantic red flag and a huge problem for the people who are controlling this. Now, another piece that gets in here is a recent revelation, which comes directly out of the work of Jefferson Morley, who's the person who found us the George Joannides connection. He's a former Washington Post reporter who gave them the straight dope about George Joannides, the person who had set up this Oswald psychological project back in New Orleans before the assassination, and proved that the CIA knew all about Oswald and all the rest. They didn't want any part of it. So Morley went off on his own. He's done it for many years. Now, there's an interesting thing about Morley, and I point this out, which is he tends to have research, and then people pick up on his research, and you see his stuff scattered around and weird tweets and stuff like that, but it's all disembodied. This guy does a lot of deep research. He's not interested in the UFO file or anything like that, but he knows this case about Kennedy and Joannides. And he found something very interesting when he was going through the Watergate tapes that were being released, that a new tape came out that featured former CIA director Richard Helms talking with Nixon. And on that tape, for the first time, we get a full piece that Nixon's fully aware that the Central Intelligence Agency assassinated President Kennedy, because he says, when it comes to the whole who shot John angle, I know what's going on here. You know, you guys, I need to know from you the details, basically, of how you assassinated him so I can help navigate this situation. It's a remarkable tape, and it is available. I highly recommend everyone listen to it. But the thrust of it is, he says to Helms, look, you need to give me the straight dope on how this was done so I can help to shield the CIA, because I believe in the CIA. Later, the CIA and Helms would participate in helping to remove Nixon through Watergate. So it's a very telling thing when Kennedy says, you know, they're going to be bringing up the whole who shot John angle. And, you know, he's referring there directly to President Kennedy, and he's implicating the CIA and saying, basically, I want to shield you guys. Tell me how, by giving me the info, sharing that data with the president. This is an important revelation, and there are things that are coming out along the CIA lines. Here's what we have. The Central Intelligence Agency, even this is a mainstream Politico. Mainstream Politico is a Democrat publication. Yes, the CIA director was part of the JFK assassination cover-up. The only thing that they're missing is "and assassination." So you see, the tide of this information is turning these people. They have to figure out how to spin this stuff, and they realize this information's coming out. Maybe also there's a hint inside that the records are going to come out and it's going to be proven. One of the big pieces hanging out there in the middle of it is George Joannides. The articles come out, New York Times, 50 years later, sealed JFK files still raise questions. Joannides was the psychological operations warfare officer for the CIA. He's the one who created the Oswald Project. He's also the one who, when all those things happen in the 1970s where they want answers like the Pike Commission or the House Commission on Assassination, Select Committee on Assassination, he's the one that's the liaison, even though the rules are we don't want anyone who was active in 1963. The CIA puts this guy forward. Joannides was given the Career Achievement Medal, which is a rare thing for CIA officers to get, because he was the one who was able to swing the entire Oswald operation. And this is basically what he's getting these accolades for. Joannides' records were hidden, and it was only through Morley's efforts at figuring out who this person was, and he mistakenly came upon his identity. As a result of that, we now know that Joannides was responsible and in the heart of some the clandestine matter of the CIA developing Oswald. So those records are not even included in the original law in 1992 set up by Congress after the JFK movie came out that says all these records on the Kennedy side need to come out. He's not even included there because they didn't even know that this guy existed. So those records are now part of a lawsuit, and they've been in there. Morley, and at times joined by Professor Scott, has sued the CIA for the records of George Joannides, and they've kicked back sufficiently. At a certain point, they won pretty handily some decisions. And one of the things that they won, the judge who was involved was Judge Kavanaugh, who eventually got elected by President Trump to become the Supreme Court Justice. So there's quite an interesting web going on in relation to this. And what we need to remember is that Kennedy himself, when he was in the Navy, was in naval intelligence. He had the awareness. There's a group report sending him information also about the Roswell crash from 1947. So we know between that and Forrestal that Kennedy had the knowledge of the UFO file going in. This is a crucial piece. Just like with Trump and his uncle, when they go in, they have this knowledge that puts them on the same footing as the deep state, and it's problematic, to say the least. This has to be the calculation of anything going on in the 2024 election, that the UFO disclosure piece, the exotic technology piece, the Kennedy fight against the deep state has to be figured into the whole piece and what we're looking at. Because the other thing on the other angle, which they're laying on this whole, you know, you're going to be stuck with this central bank digital currency, you're going to be under AI, you're going to be in this biometric system. It all relies on the fact that they have been working for eight decades with this, at least eight decades, with this advanced exotic technology directly related to the UFO file. Can't be left out. And we're going to see that they're going to have their own version of disclosure already. One final piece I'll do, since I mentioned Truman and all that. There was a timeline that came up yeah, some of this timeline's important. September 18th, National Security Act 1947, establishes the National Security Council and Central Intelligence Agency to replace National Intelligence Authority and Central Intelligence Group. The thing that they put in there still was operational, the Central Intelligence Agency. It is when the OPC merges with it that it becomes the real monster that it is now. Central Intelligence Agency Act of 1949 provides special administrative authorities and responsibilities for the agency and the director. One of the biggest mistakes in the entire history, but it's important to look at the timelines for it because it's coming post the UFO wave. And that's a crucial piece. And then finally, in 59, President Eisenhower presides at the laying of the cornerstone at CIA headquarters in Langley. If you look, you're going to find in 86, when they expanded it, George Bush shows up for the new laying out of this. And of course, George Bush being the CIA director in the 1970s, but also having that thread directly connected further back to the JFK assassination through Zapata and his early association with the CIA. And then Bush's control of the UFO file to the point where when Jimmy Carter asked him, you know, as president, I want the information around the UFO file. He said, you're the president. It's a need to know and you don't need to know. And Carter fired Bush. So these are the things that are on the record there. That battle, it can be traced through other means. By the time we get to the central core of the Kennedys, one of the important pieces, one of the things that would kind of level things out in society is this knowledge of this extra exotic technology. It's a crucial factor and it can't be missed. Speaking of that factor, by the way, that's the same E. Howard Hunt who said to Caddy in private, remember, he was the super spy for 2 decades for the CIA. He said Kennedy was assassinated over the UFO file. And he said it just before he went to prison. So he wanted it. He wanted it on the record somewhere. It just happened to be with his good friend, Douglas Caddy. That is Joe Anides being given the Career Intelligence Medal by Bobby Inman. And Inman is still alive. And one of the things, you know, when Kevin McCarthy got in as speaker, I wrote him a letter. I said, hey, you know, anything that you do in relation to the Kennedy files, you should release the Kennedy files. But the UFO file aspect is right in the heart of that. There are still people around, you know, for example, Bobby Inman, who admitted in the 1980s, remember he was deputy CIA director and NSA director, he admitted that not only did we know about UFO crashes, we knew who the occupants were. He said it on the record. This is extraordinary. Well, Bobby Inman is still with us. And after, you know, these incredible stints in government and SAIC and all the rest, he can be put under oath and they can ask him, why did they give this medal to Joe Anides? And was it directly related to the fact that he navigated the problem of the JFK assassination cover-up with the UFO file? That's where the heart of the secrecy piece lays for the Central Intelligence Agency. That's the thing that they don't want to get around. It's interesting, you know, Mike Pompeo is in the middle of this interview. I put this up on Twitter maybe about 3 weeks ago, but he's talking to John Stossel and he's getting these questions, you know, why when you were, you know, CIA director, why didn't you release the JFK records 60 years later, you know? And he's like, oh, you know, it's a problem. It could endanger people and all the rest. And in the middle of it, in this glib kind of weird moment of blurting, he says, I also saw the UFO file. It's like, well, what does that got to do with anything? These things are embedded together. They're crisscrossed, which is something about the JFK assassination files are directly related to the fact that, you know, the CIA is there involved in assassinating the president, but the reasoning, the thing that goes on behind it has to do directly with that exotic technology aerospace piece, which is found right in the UFO file. That's why you see this incredible reflection of the UFO file aspects around this. And finally, on that, two things. One, this is the Jefferson Morley suing the CIA in court for the Joannides records. Let's see how that would show up here. Well, it's getting a lot of glare, but it's easy enough to find. And it's Jefferson Morley versus the CIA. And it's a crucial case. It's had a number of permutations, and, you know, he's lost a lot of the cases, but the fact that they're being raised, and such distinguished people as Professor Scott have joined the case at times, I think is important. This week that we've been through, the wild week of Bobby Kennedy announcing and all these things happening and all these attacks coming in, and Stepford Biden saying, hey, I'm running, I'm going to announce next week after saying he was going to do it in the fall, was the same week that Kirsten Gillibrand, who I've pointed out a number of times on this program as somebody who has positioned herself with Marco Rubio to create this UFO defense office, and they attached it to the National Defense Authorization Act, which is a very kind of unscrupulous and effective thing to do. But that National Defense Authorization Act, of course, secures $1 trillion in military spending. The president has to sign it every year and renew the September 11th emergency that we all live under as a result of that, giving that COG, you know, continuity of government piece, it's hanging out right there in the corridor of our entire system, ready to be activated by something like a UFO threat or something conjured up by the Central Intelligence Agency like that. Office tasked with investigating reports on UFOs has seen its profile rise since a Chinese surveillance balloon traversed the U.S. Yeah, and they shot down two identified objects, but they never gave us any debris. They said, oh, it disappeared. Yeah. but this whole piece that we've been covering very steadily for you, you know, I've been tracking Gillibrand for a number of years, and the fact that, you know, her whole family involvement in the Nexium cult, her dad's involvement in British aerospace, her father-in-law, rather. This is, you know, these are substantial, substantial questions. And they came up when she ran for president in 2020. They still haven't been answered to anyone's satisfaction, nor to the fact of the fact that she was a Hillary Clinton puppet. And here's Hillary deep involved in the UFO file again. During a Senate Armed Services Emerging Threats Committee, remember, the UFO thing always has to be tied into a threat when they do these committees. Otherwise, they don't care about the science of it. They're like, give us the threat, give us the UFO DOE, UFO Defense Office. The All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, or ARRO, Gillibrand, who chairs the panel, said despite substantial initial funding for ARRO, the budgets that the Biden administration proposed for fiscal year 23 and 24 offered only enough funding to cover the office's operating expenses. So they're already looking for money, even without the threat being active. So in the middle of all this, Popular Mechanics decides to bolster all this, that they're going to promote the deflated and debunked Lou Elizondo, who is the former CIA guy who actually turned out to be a current CIA guy. Well, they pushed this whole thing, you know, with him and how he was, you know, a disgruntled guy from the government who needed to release all this UFO stuff. And I debunked his information. Stephen Greenstreet from the New York Post debunked his information. John Greenwald from the Black Vault debunked his information. And he said, I ran ATIP, you know, this UFO office, and we did all this secret stuff with it. Well, it turned out in documents, he admitted that ATIP was an activity. It's just something, you know, it wasn't funded or anything. And so there was no program like that. Well, Popular Mechanics, which gave us the phony thing about 9/11 and how Building 7 should have fallen exactly the way it did and just shut up. They came out with this thing and they said, well, you know, actually, as it turns out, you know, this guy is the guy who was against the government and trying to get the truth out of the government. And what they don't realize, or they do realize, and they're saying it this way, is this guy is the government. He's always been a government Pentagon intelligence officer. And that's just, you know, there's no denying that. Even he admits that he works for the government. So I don't know the story and the PR around it, but the article is so syrupy and ridiculous about Elizondo. I should.
Yes,
I
should. You should.
There's so many different kind of cringeworthy moments in it. But the upshot of the whole thing, this is amazing. This is one of the pieces from it. Meanwhile, the former intelligence official, he's not former anything. He's current and he's active now. He's in charge of trying to gin up the UFO threat, just like he has since we've been covering him for 4 or 5 years. The former intelligence official says that an army of more than 1,500 volunteers within the intelligence community now meets on classified networks where they analyze UAP videos and data. First of all, anyone who uses UAP is suspect, because that's just the BR, BS PR move for, you know, them trying to resell this. This group includes, quote, literally everyone, the CIA to the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. Now, there he is going on the record saying the CIA is, I'm working with the CIA and these 1,500 people. He's always said, and we've always had these statements from him about working with the CIA. What is the problem with the UFO community realizing this guy is a CIA agent? I don't get it. So this is the nature of the problem I've pointed out. And I've pointed it out repeatedly that a number of these programs that ask about, you know, somebody asked me the other day, they were like, what do you think of the Joe Rogan UFO programs? And I said, he's never done one. He's never done one. He has CIA people come on and spin the CIA UFO threat. That's not a UFO show. You know, he's done the Lazar circus thing with Corbell. Those aren't real UFO shows. So he's never done a real UFO show. That's what I think of Joe Rogan's UFO coverage. It's never happened. He, you know, he's under instructions from his marketing team or whatever to basically cover these CIA people. That these people who put together those shows, they don't know anything about the UFO file. This is a big problem sort of hanging out in the middle of all this. All right. So finally, this is some of the syrupy coverage that Elizondo got from Popular Mechanics. And it ain't so popular anymore. All right. The day Biden signed the historic defense bill, Elizondo walked out onto his front porch and allowed himself a quiet 10 minutes. His mind drifted back across the 5 years, the meetings, the phone calls, the character attacks. Yeah, like when he attacked everyone in the UFO field because they exposed him. His mind drifted back across the past 5 years. The tweets, the travel, the arguments with both allies and detractors, the TV shoots and reshoots. Oh, it's so hard to shoot those TV programs when the CIA sets you up with a budget. The request to take his picture at random restaurants. Oh, I'm in the middle. I'm in the middle of my appetizer. Go away. Go away. Leave me. The hefting of Blackwater tanks. What? The efforts to soothe his wife's frustration. I don't know if I want to hear about that. All that went into the single-handed and collective pushing of the boulder up the hill over and over every day until finally, it stopped rolling back down. Oh, King Lou, as he stood there all of those years of work and all that might still happen, he felt at least for a short time as that far-off Wyoming horizon. This is a serious article in Popular Mechanics. First of all, there's no like examination of him, what his motivations might be, the CIA control over the UFO threat, nothing, just this incredible soap opera wailing. Lou inhaled the mountain air and gazed into the immense sky. The calendar had just flipped past the winter solstice and the days were crisp and abrupt. In a blink, the sky would be full of stars. To the stars, right? The whistleblower protections informed by Elizondo's experiences will help ensure for generations that no one fears retribution for calling out any failures to implement these new policies. Elizondo is not ready for a victory lap. His life is still frayed and diffuse. for income. He's now employed by a Washington-based software company that does work with the federal government. There is still information to be disseminated, research to be done, science to be conducted. And of course, there is still the question of what is up there in the skies, causing so much tumult down below. I'd love to say mission complete, says Lou, but we're not there yet. There's more work to be done. Oh, and let me tell you, that's just like one little piece of it. This is the most syrupy thing I've ever experienced. And I think it's the most embarrassing, cringeworthy article I've ever read, not just in Popular Mechanics, but anywhere. It is horrible. And with that, Miss Olivia, I go to your questions.
Okay,
I still
right,
have a little
great.
More, but yes.
I could have had you read the entire article in that voice.
Inhaling the crisp Wyoming air. I think that was...
All right, let's start here. Wendy Eater, is DJ working up to saying if RFK Jr. is winning the Democratic nomination, they will unleash the alien invasion, LOL? Mm. Nena says, well, the aliens are next on Von Braun's list, aren't they? Moments Divine says, is the CIA completely run by ETs? It would explain a lot. And Kyle Hagen says, sure does would. Bobby have any knowledge of the UFO files? And if so, how much?
Well, the answer to the last question is we don't know. I will say this. Go to the UFO threat activity. Well, we just went through in February a UFO threat activity. NORAD was involved. They shot things down. The NORAD commander, General Van Herk, he of the 509th Roswell group, which is true. He's check his history out. He comes directly out of that 509th lineage. And the 509th group is the same group that handled the Roswell crash. I mean, he wasn't around then, obviously, but it's a generational thing. They're going to use the UFO threat. It's going to increase. There's going to be pressure around it. They want a whole funding corridor. They want the narrative control. They want emergency powers. These governments can't operate because they don't have popular support. And so they need to resort over and over again to emergency powers. I mentioned this with President Emmanuel Macron in France, because what did he do when he needed to raise, lower the retirement age? Well, this is interesting. He raised the age that people could retire at because, you know, he bumped it up, but it had no support in his legislature. So what did he do? He just said, I'm going to write it in. That's it. So that's just an emergency power activity to bypass your legislature. So Justin Trudeau, when he is facing off against the truckers, who he's pissed off dramatically by insisting that they take the vaccine in order to have a job, they protest him, and his response presses the emergency button. So for 3 days they have emergency, right? And the military goes in and rounds those people up and shuts off their money and does all the rest of it. These people operate by emergency powers. Now, during the entire COVID operation, that's all we got, which was this person's running this by emergency powers in New Zealand, Australia's under emergency this. Here, they're under emergency things. They're shutting down businesses, you know, destroying people's lives, disseminating, just, you know, desecrating entire small businesses, ruining people's lives. People lost their homes, you know, suicide, depression, health, all these things went off the charts. All because of the emergency powers that they seized, which are not in the Constitution anywhere. Now, in other countries, also, their constitution may not be as strong, but there's nothing in those countries that say you can do this kind of thing either. Now, the emergency powers, they can't get true support from their citizens on. You know, Stepford Biden, even in Democratic polls, is in the 30s for support. I'd say he's more in the 20s, maybe, because you have enough sort of brainwashed Democrats. When you get to people, if you really drill down on the support for people like Trudeau, for example, you're going to find they're like 25% support, and they can get in with that. That's the weird thing. but they no longer have majority support. So emergency powers are the way that they can do things. It's the same way that Hitler rolled out his emergency, the Enabling Act and all this stuff that allowed him to merge the office of chancellor and president into that single dictator role. Well, that was the end for Germany. So that ripples through history, you know, the Reichstag fire. Well, they always need the incident to do it, you know. And so that's the same way we got into the Vietnam War, and it goes on and on. But the UFO file, the fact that the government has been laying out this thing and that they want this piece out there, and that the media, who is the same media that is attacking RFK's candidacy and attacks Trump, anyone who goes outside of the structure, they get, you know, they have to be just drilled down on a regular basis. They just have to be hammered, you know, and everyone has to think, oh, you know, so that I have what would ordinarily be an intelligent person in my Twitter feed, and they'll go, oh, you know, RFK Jr. is just a Bannon, you know, puppet, because they're believing a CBS news story by a guy who doesn't cite any of the sources. And the guy is one of the dumbest, and I can tell you, he's one of the dumbest reporters you've ever seen in your life. So, you know, he's a Democratic plant. So then, you know, what you have is there are Bidenistas out there, and they are propagating through social media these things about Bobby Kennedy. Oh, don't you know that he wants to lock up people who don't agree with him on climate change? It's a complete falsehood. The thing that they're taking that from is in 2006, when he said corporate polluters, and, you know, if you have entire communities damaged by the corporate pollution, those people should go to jail. And he's right. So don't, you know, don't believe the hype. Remember, if you fall for something stupid like that, that the Bidenistas are putting out, wear a dunce cap, stand in the corner for 30 minutes, then come back and say, you know, I was duped and I'm back. Because that stuff is ridiculous. And you're going to find it. It's going to be all over. They're going to try and do this. Why? Because Kennedy is going against the establishment. He's decoupling state and corporate power. It's a massive job to do. He wants to roll back the military industrial complex machine that is ruining Ukraine with our support and is bringing us to the brink of World War III and nuclear war with Russia, who actually has more nukes than we do. So, you know, we have to get very clear about what's happening here. And also, I can tell you, as I've said before, there's a whole thing around the independent alternative world, and we're growing, that, you know, the presidential elections don't matter. And how dare you even bring up presidential elections? Well, I'll tell you, we can't take four more years of Stepford Biden. We can't. You literally will not have a country if you do that. You have got to install the body politics important. In the head is the president. You have got to have the right president going forward for 2024. And it's possible. I think with the people behind Trump and with the people behind Bobby Kennedy, we have on both sides real desire for real change, you know. If somebody wants to throw somebody else out there, you know, if you've got Rand Paul and wants to run on the Constitution, great. We'll look at him too. You know, we're not going to look at DeSantis because he's, although he's done a great job in Florida, you know, on the presidential level, he's been dodgy. And the thing is, you know, he's a young guy and he can wait until, you know, this is President Trump's last shot. Basically, he can have this term. And the Republican group, you know, the Republican Party should be united going into next year's election. There's no question about it. And there are no viable candidates. DeSantis certainly, you know, he's kind of, in a way, you could say DeSantis is tainting the good developments and the good record he's developed in Florida by undercutting Trump's candidacy. It's not smart politics. And the fact that, you know, the Bush types are behind him and encouraging him to do this is unusual. But as I've pointed out before, he has a very unusual backer as well. And that backer's name is Robert Bigelow from Bigelow Aerospace. Well, Bigelow Aerospace, you know, Robert gave him $10 million. But recently he came out and he told Time Magazine, I would stake my fortune to get DeSantis into the White House. Well, this guy, you know, has been right in the heartbeat of the UFO thing for the past three decades. He's tried to take his real estate enterprise into space with Bigelow Aerospace and set up tourist attractions in space. But the idea of this crisscross has to be looked at. The UFO file and the aerospace piece is already active in this presidential election. We just need to get people aroused to look at it properly, because I can tell you for sure, you know, the Trump Tesla UFO piece is involved in the 2024 election because Trump's in there. And I mentioned that, you know, Trump went off about Uncle John with Tucker Carlson the other day, but he did it again. He was on one of those bro podcasts, and he starts talking about John Trump. So he's putting that out there. It's a message that he's giving specifically. And we know the key thing about John Trump is twofold. And one of these things we brought before the public ourselves. One, he brought the information. He was called in by the FBI to sort through Tesla's papers looking for information about a secret weapon in 1943 after Tesla died. But what's the other piece that we put on the record, which is crucial? We put on the record that while he was at MIT, he was Vannevar Bush's protege. And as a matter of fact, if you dig through that history, you'll find that Vannevar Bush came forward and selected him to do the job of going through Tesla's papers. Now, we know from Robert Sarbarker, noted physicist, who was right up there with Oppenheimer and these guys, that Vannevar Bush was in charge of the UFO file. You don't need any MJ-12 documents for that. Sarbarker said it on the record. He's in charge of the UFO file, and he is Trump's uncle's mentor. That gives us a much better idea about what Trump is talking about in relation to, oh, you know, the power that my uncle talked about, the things he shared with me, all this stuff that he's talking about. Now we get a better idea of what he's going on about. It makes a lot more sense. And I want to say that, you know, in relation to the information that we've put out, you know, there's all sorts of incredible information that people put out on a regular basis, you know, from Gigi Young to Joseph Farrell and others. And we try to catalog as much of it as we can on this program. But I want to say this, that whenever I've interacted with television, it's always been a problem, and very often they end up vacuuming up any of the ideas that I have and shooting them back out in this weird, ripshod way. One of the things where they did that was a show called The Tesla Files, which the History Channel talked to me, got all the information about Trump and Tesla, and I had already put it out, so my stuff had already been out there for a year, and then they spit back this kind of, you know, half-baked show about it, and they never got to the point about it. And, you know, they got spooked off probably because they mentioned Trump or whatever. But this happens, and it goes to this key argument that I have about information, which is that you need potent information in this period of time. Don't accept the half-baked stuff, you know. And I've pointed this out in relation to some of the you know, really big corporate podcasts around these things, that they will swoop in and pick up the topic and give you a bitter dregs of the real McCoy, and just keep that in mind. Yes, Miss Olivia.
Okay. Give me a second. Okay. So Flippinex says a uniparty ticket is always a possibility if the Dems do to RFK what they did to Bernie. And Corey Evans says if Trump is smart, he will wait until RFK Jr. is inevitably screwed by the DNC and approach him about being his VP. That would go a long way to fixing this country.
There's a lot of interesting things there, but here's the thing: right now, the Democrats will use any talk like that about a unity ticket with Trump and Kennedy to try to tie Kennedy in with, you know, the Trump machine and stuff like that. Kennedy has a clear shot at the Democratic nomination. That's the thing that I think everyone can get behind. Getting Biden out, it may be the job of both parties, because the Trump force is coming in to remove him, and then on this side, Kennedy force is coming in. I think that Kennedy would make a very viable president because of his depth of knowledge. And his family's background gives him, I think, that incredible, you know, it is an incredible background. His own battles with large corporations and his own ethics in regard to that is something we haven't seen in the White House in a long time. So I think he would be incredibly viable on that. Trump has learned a great deal from his first term in office and could also correct a lot of the things that are going on in relation to the deep state. So I think there's an opportunity for both to create a very exciting 2024 election. And the idea of the unity ticket is something we raised, remember, and brought forward. The thing that I think needs to be kind of worked out over time is right now it's all about removing Biden. The possibility of Trump running with Kennedy exists, and yet they are, because they do actually share a great deal of perspective on issues and, you know, about human rights and the Constitution and things of this nature. But I think that right now you have to see both of these people as vying very hard for their party's nomination. And I think that should something extra come up in relation to this, then it would be required maybe that there'd be some talk in the background. But I think it's something that we'll keep a very close eye on. Yes.
Richard Humphrey, do you think RFK Jr. should have his own security like Trump did? Secret Service has a bad track record with his family.
Yeah, I'm sure the Kennedys know a lot about security. And, you know, I think that there's a sense of, you know, fate with moving forward and doing this. And it's a good, strong sense of doing the right thing. And I don't think that there's a lot of fear involved. Actually, I think someone almost clumsily during one of his interviews brought this up, and his response, I think, was very solid, which was just, you know, I'm interested in doing the job I came here to do today. So, you know, I don't think that RFK Jr. is losing any sleep about that. But I appreciate the idea that security is good.
I got to throw this in. Catherine Harris basically said that a Trump Kennedy presidency would be called Magalot. Which is great.
That's hilarious. Well, listen, the recapture of Camelot, you know, needs to happen. There's no question about it. It's been attempted. In 1968 was attempted by Bobby's dad. And this is another attempt. And I think it's important that it happen. And I also feel that with the persecution of Trump, in a way, these guys really have a lot in common, you know, and that they can relate on a certain level, because both are being heckled by the media and de-amplified and harangued and mischaracterized. That much they certainly have in common. Remember that Trump was going to appoint, and did in fact appoint, RFK Jr. to a vaccine study commission, and that Gates talked Trump out of it. That's on record. And Gates brags about doing that too. So we can only imagine what would have happened if things had worked out a little bit differently there. But yeah, certainly there's some common cause involved, and how that unfurls in this very interesting 18 months we're about to go through is going to be incredibly interesting. Yes.
William Ledger, what are the dangers to the Trump and or Kennedy campaigns surrounding the COVID lies / COVID truth?
To the Kennedy campaign?
To both Trump and Kennedy.
Oh, I think, you know, they both have very strong positions on it. Kennedy really has an even stronger position than Trump because he's done the medical work. Look, Trump's a business guy. You know, and you're not going to expect him to have that depth of knowledge around it. So in some ways, you know, we've seen before that they would try to tie that whole warp speed thing around Trump if they couldn't get him any other way. So there's a lot of weirdness in relation to that. I think that Kennedy's position is really 100%. You know, he's been right from day one, and his book, The Real Anthony Fauci, is remarkable. I think it's an eye-opening piece. It's the same way that in previous eras we discovered this incredible corruption and how to bring it through. So he's got, you know, a lot of really kind of strong accolades on that side. I would say when it comes to having stood up against that part of it, he has a better track record than Trump. There's no question about it. Yes.
THP3 free. Surely DJ doesn't think the CIA/Deep State will roll over for RFK Jr. What dirty tricks will they have in store for him? Wendy Eater, do you really believe the Democratic machine would allow RFK Jr. to get the nomination? If RFK Jr. doesn't get the Democratic nomination, do you think he could win as a write-in candidate?
No. Look, there's no infrastructure for an independent candidate, or, you know, the infrastructure that's been created, actually, the libertarians have. But over and over again, we see the libertarians get like 2% of the vote. Something, they need to do something with that party. They spend all this money and time getting on all these ballots in all these states, and then they can't get their candidate above a couple of points. So something is wrong with the way that they're doing things. And yes, they're principled, which I appreciate, and I share a lot of the principles that they have. But that does highlight this problem that we're into the system where a Democrat or a Republican is going to win. And there need to be stronger supports for independent parties. And I wish there were. The last independent candidate who did anything was Ross Perot. He got 20% of the vote, which is remarkable, considering he got out of the race and got back in. Had he stayed in and not been spooked by Bush or whatever, then we might have been looking at something different there. But it is important to look at that and say, huh, you know, 20% of the vote. And I think if you go back in history, you'll find Anderson ran in 80. He got 7 or 8% of the vote. And Reagan trounced everybody. And then before that, like I said, what's weird is that George Wallace ran with Curtis LeMay, and they won like six states in 68. Really weird fact to put across, and I'm not sure if everyone really got it when I mentioned it in my presidential roundup like a month ago. In 1968, just as an interesting trivia point, Ronald Reagan got more votes in the Republican primaries than Richard Nixon, even though he wasn't running. Isn't that strange? The world understood that Reagan was going to be president. It was there. And he actually racked up more votes than Nixon during those primaries. Think about that. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. It's great to be here with you. This is Recapturing Camelot. Can Bobby Jr. do it? Well, this week, seeing him in person, I believe he can. I believe he can. And I think he gave a remarkable speech. And if he's given a chance, he can really enrich the conversation, and he can gain a lot of those disaffected Democrats back into the fold, and he can mount a real challenge against Stepford Biden, who, between the pressure of just, you know, his own cognitive decline, but having a real challenger in those primaries could really set off a chain reaction that could be incredibly important. What they're trying to do, they're trying to hide Stepford Biden from the public by having the New Hampshire primaries put off. DNC delivers blow to New Hampshire, Iowa with overhaul of primary calendar. This is what's behind it. And New Hampshire is where it's all going to happen. I'll tell you, keep an eye on New Hampshire, because that primary is going down, and I do not believe that those officials will ever in a million years, even if it's the DNC pulling their money, let go of that status as the first in the nation. I think if I was to give Kennedy advice, I'd give him two pieces of advice. One, start directly attacking President Biden. No more soft taps. You have to go directly for it because the corruption that you're talking about is coming directly from the Biden administration. Go after that administration. It's a weak administration. And they're about to go down anyway. I didn't even get to the whole thing about the intelligence officials being coerced by Anthony Blinken into saying that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. That's a whole huge story, and it's going to rock the House. Interestingly enough, I think that there is that element on the Democrat side that wants to remove Biden because they see him as an incredibly weak, probably the weakest candidate that they could have. And they're trying to kind of ease on down the road with Biden and say, well, you know, you got a scandal. Here's your excuse to get out, because how this has ever gotten out is remarkable. The acting CIA director was coerced by Anthony Blinken to interfere in the 2020 election. This is amazing. What an incredible story. So we're going to be seeing a lot more of that. Make no mistake. Let's see. I might have some of it here. Hang on just a second. What else you got?
Provocateur Astrology 2. I agree. I live in New Hampshire, and there's a lot of talk about voting for RFK Jr., even if they're Republicans.
Aha. Well, I'm glad to hear it. I'm very glad to hear it. A couple of quick things here on that Intel letter. First of all, this could change things dramatically, and it could give an opening for Bobby. So it turns out that Stafford Biden was desperate when the Hunter laptop hit, and that interfering on his behalf with a 2020 election was the Anthony Blinken and the CIA director. Now, former deputy director of CIA Mike Morrell and all the others that signed this letter will go down in history as having been participants in the overthrow of the United States of America. That's something that General Flynn put on the record. But it's interesting because Biden campaign, this is in the New York Post now, Biden campaign prompted spies to write false letters about Hunter's laptop. So Joe Biden's presidential campaign prompted former acting CIA director Mike Morrell to help Biden by organizing 50 colleagues to write that letter. That is election interference. So something major is going to go down. Joe Biden's presidential campaign prompted former acting CIA director Mike Morrell to help Biden by organizing 50 colleagues to sign a letter in October 2020 falsely claiming the damning emails from Hunter Biden's laptop published by the Post were Russian disinformation. In private sworn testimony, Morrell told the House Judiciary Committee that Anthony Blinken, now Secretary of State, destroying Ukraine, was the senior campaign official who reached out to him on or before October 17th, 3 days after the Post published an email from the laptop suggesting Hunter had introduced his Ukrainian business partner to his father, then Vice President Biden. Morrell, identified as a potential CIA director under Biden, said he organized the letter to help Vice President Biden because I wanted him to win the election. Until Blinken's call, Morrell told House investigators he had no intention of writing any statement exonerating Biden. That's interference. He agreed the conversation with Blinken triggered that intent. At 10:53 p.m. the night of the call, Blinken emailed Morrell USA Today article claiming that the FBI was examining whether Hunter's laptop was part of a disinformation campaign. Morrell said Blinken reached out to him about the letter. At the bottom of Blinken's email was the signature block of Andrew Bates, then director of rapid response for the Biden campaign. That's an open and shut case. Forget about Stormy Daniels. We need to get D.A. Briggs to put down the ham sandwich and get a real case going on. Morrell said he did a little bit of my own research, then reached out to retired CIA senior operations officer Mark Palmeropoulos for assistance in compiling the letter discrediting the Post reporting. Now, an interesting series of events happened after that, including the fact that Twitter banned the New York Post from publishing the story. This was a line in the sand, which I've pointed out. It happened in October during the 2020 election, and it should have been widely renounced. Instead, it lingered around, you know. But this was an incredible travesty of press justice, of government interference, and everything else. So this was a major moment. It's interesting that this comes out now after the sale of Twitter to Elon Musk. I guarantee you there were forces inside of Twitter that knew that this information at some point was going to come out. And so then the purchase of Twitter looks a little more unusual in retrospect. Yes, Miss Olivia. Okay, two more questions. And we're
okay,
out.
Well, these are all tied together. Scarlet Fire says, HRC controls the DNC is my guess. Neva Moore, spoiler, question. Will Dems remove Kamala to make her a federal judge, bring in Hillary as VP, Joe gets sick and steps down, then Hillary is POTUS and runs for 2024 against Bobby/Trump? And Bonnie E says, I've heard rumors that Obama's wife is planning to run for presidency and perhaps with Oprah. What are your thoughts, DJ?
So Michelle Obama and Oprah. Yeah. First of all, the first scenario was laid out by our friend Judge Napolitano, and I reported it here a couple of weeks ago. It's very interesting. Here's what he said. There were Democratic operatives in his ear saying to him that they were ticked off. Now, he has all kinds, you know, Judge Napolitano has all kinds of political connections. He was on Fox News. He's a libertarian activist. He has all kinds of, you know, and he's been a judge for three decades. So they were in his ear complaining about Hillary Clinton making the pressure move to get Briggs to indict Trump. This makes sense to me because it feels to me that the deep state is moving along with the classified case, the deep state is moving along with the Georgia case. You know, they're trumping up these different things to get former President Trump. But the DA Briggs case is so weak and so old, and so outdated and outmoded, and was denounced even by the likes of, you know, Democratic backbenchers like CNN, that something is wrong with that whole piece and that action. The idea that it was spurred on by Hillary as a desperate move to get Trump in prison, and that the scenario that he laid out was they would appoint Kamala to a federal judgeship, they would swear in Hillary like they swore in Ford when Agnew went out, and that Biden would then step down for a health reason, and it would be Hillary facing off against Trump. Now, this might have been something that this scenario is very interesting. It might have been something that Hillary cooked up and thinks she can pull off. But and maybe some of the deep state is watching to see if she can pull it off. But to me, you know, there is something strange about the Bragg case. So there might be a certain amount of truth to that one. Yes.
Al Qaeda says 1 million Germans hit the streets to hear RFK Jr. speak. Not yeah. a word in the press. It was a record-sized crowd.
True.
And Tubatorium says, what, by the way, when was that?
He did a major speech over there. I think it was about 6 months ago.
Okay. Tubatorium, please ask Daniel, what are his impressions of the magic of the deep state and the magic of the Kennedy family? Merovingians seem there's some esoteric element that is missing.
Oh, you know, it's very interesting.
that's a whole show.
Yeah, I would say this that's interesting, which is Marlene Dietrich, of all people, gives us a very interesting insight into John Kennedy. So John Kennedy spends a lot of time over in Europe during World War II, and he has a boat trip with Marlene Dietrich. And when they asked her about this at the end of her life, she said, did you have this relationship with Kennedy? And she's like, oh, we just spent a little time together. But she's, I'll tell you the strangest thing about him. The whole time, you know, we took this boat ride, the whole time, all he wanted to do was read my palm, tell me about astrology, and tell me all about the mystical connections in people's lives. She said he was so into this mystical stuff, I couldn't believe it. Now, that's interesting to me because the person who, you know, had kind of mentored Ernest Hemingway when he was in France also had been somebody who was a professor, a female speaker at Harvard for John F. Kennedy. And I always wondered if that wasn't the crisscross, but she was very, very well steeped in mysticism. So Yeah, there's a deep mystical level associated there. The deep state occult part, if you're thinking, you know, there's an occult action involved with deep state activity, you're 100% correct. And from the JFK assassination through 9/11 and some of these other things, there are occult signatures all over. So, you know,
well, there's blood sacrifice. I mean,
yeah, it goes, it runs deep. but what I would say for sure is that this is something that, you know, the information about is something they cherish, because the deep state, look, when I talk about mystery schools and secret societies, you have to remember Rudolf Steiner, when he identified the things that Blavatsky went through when she came here, he said that the mystery schools and the brotherhoods that she encountered ran the political system in America. That was in the 1870s. And then he was talking about around the First World War, say 1914, 1915, how both schools, left-hand schools path and right-hand schools, were clashing in America and in England and in Germany. So, you know, the mystery schools are deep, deep in this process, and they're trying to move the culture forward. But the secret society mystery schools that are on the left-hand track are doing what they've always done, sowing chaos. And so you have that clash there with some gradations of gray along the way between the two sides. So you are looking at a clash of the mystery schools. Make no mistake about it. Miss Olivia.
Okay.
Final question.
Najat is going to kill me if I don't ask this question. Najat Madri. Last night's interview with Dr. F, he mentioned the Giza Tech being used during World War I. Could Joe Sr. Kennedy get his hands on those files during his ambassadorship to the UK?
Well, that's very interesting. I thought that was a very compelling piece that Joseph brought up, which is that we were already using Tesla's system during World War I before we were supposed to have that kind of ability for communications. I think that's very telling, because it gives us an idea that they were using the other piece of Tesla's incredible invention. And part of the things that he was talking about was the immense power, you know, for example, the system at its zenith could crack a planet in half and things of this nature. So when we get to fast flash forward and we get to John Trump investigating the papers, and he's looking at these papers, and one of the things that he says in these various interviews, there's a lot of interesting interviews with John Trump where he talks about those. He says, well, Tesla was writing letters to the czars of Russia. And this is what confused me, because I said, you know, the czars, you're going back there. You're going back before the Russian Revolution. But this whole idea about, you know, Tesla making this death ray invention and trying to prevent Hitler from taking over and offering America to work with it, you know, they always stress that, oh, he's doing this stuff, this kind of activity in the late 30s and early 40s and stuff, and that's the death ray that they're looking for, this weapon. What the FBI people told John Trump was that they were looking for information in Tesla's papers about how to take down flying objects at a distance. Now think about that. The FBI were the ones who came up with the unidentified flying object, UFO title, and the X-Files, of course. And here they are looking very hard through Tesla's stuff for this one particular thing. Later, he would say, a weapon of immense capability. But that flying object part, I think, is interesting. They're asking him, they're prompting him, saying, oh yeah, in relation to everything else, like, find out about this taking down flying objects at a distance from any remote location. So there's something very telling. Now, here's something to consider. There's a group deep in the government that has access to this technology. And, you know, when Tesla died, some of his information disappeared. Some of the trunks containing his information disappeared. And then some of the info that John Trump looked at, you know, which he gave a report on, that's one piece of information. And then the trunks that disappear have another piece of information. Are there warring factions who hold one half of the X technology and the other one holds the other half, and they can't stand each other because anyone who's on their level sets them off? And you have to go back when you think about Trump getting in office and waking up to a scandal every day and waking up to an impeachment every day. And even for this psycho, out of control media establishment government, there's something so off the charts about the way that they handled Trump that whenever his name would be mentioned, you'd have to peel him off the ceiling. So it has always said to me that the information that Trump had in relation to that X technology puts him on a similar level with them. And then, of course, I always bring in the Roy Cohn piece, because Roy Cohn set the tone for the prominence of Donald Trump and his political ascendancy. And Roy Cohn knew everything about the deep state that there was to know, including the aerospace aspect. So it's undeniable. Now, the Kennedy factor in all this, the Kennedys going in, when John Kennedy becomes president, he knows a great deal about the UFO file, and he's got the relationship with Forrestal. And then Forrestal gets killed. So the relevance of the information that Forrestal had may have dawned on JFK at a higher level then. That's the late 40s. You know, by the time he gets in office, he's well acquainted with these things, and he's working off of Eisenhower and Truman, who have been dealing with the UFO file and the CIA after all. So there's something in the Kennedy piece that knows a great deal about the advanced technology, and the UFO file aspect in relation to the Kennedy piece, the reason for the assassination, for my own research based on Douglas Caddy and based on all these different factors, is that the UFO file was the direct response, was the direct sort of trigger for the assassination. The Central Intelligence Agency takeover of all these different aspects of foreign policy, yes, but the biggest secret inside the national security state, the UFO file. And that would make Kennedy, in their eyes, trying to share it with the Russians, a national security threat, and give them the ability to tell themselves they were heroes. So this is important, and I think it's in play for all of this. And I have to say, you know, I'm glad you mentioned John Trump there, because we have a lot that we've brought forward about John Trump, but there's a lot of questions about it. And the fact that President Trump is continually bringing up his uncle, I think, is very, very telling going into 2023, because, in fact, I believe he's saying to his critics, I haven't lost any knowledge of the X tech. That's how it shapes up. There's no question. And with that, Miss Olivia,
can I ask you one more question?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Nathan Etzel, Olivia, please ask questions about JFK's National Security Action Memorandum, NSAM. Are there more national security NSAMs besides NSAM 57 still to be indicated? Are there more tools left behind by other presidents to fight the deep state?
The NSAM series is there at the Kennedy Library. You can read it. It's NSAM 55, 56, and 57. It was 57 that Trump implemented after the election was over in 2020, after he fired Mark Esper. He went with some officials and initiated executive order, National Security Action Memorandum 57. That took away the ability for the CIA to do paramilitary operations. Now, it was supposed to be activated on January 6th. This is the interesting thing about J6 and all that nonsense. But what I will say is interesting is, I'm sure people have asked me about this, what happened to it after Trump activated it? Kennedy gave it to the Joint Chiefs, and he gave it to them in 1962. And according to Fletcher Prouty, they never enacted it because they were afraid, that is the Joint Chiefs, were afraid of taking on the CIA at that point. But it was Kennedy's directive to them, and he said they shelved it. So it hung around there, presidency to presidency. Certainly Johnson, Nixon, none of those guys did anything with it. Trump knew of its existence, and he activated it before he left. Now, what happened to it is, my guess is that somewhere in the midst of all this government minutia, you can find Trump's order being canceled, like his Garden of Heroes thing, by the Biden administration. But it is very telling. Remember, Fletcher Prouty said that they always needed an enemy to go after, and that he felt, and he wrote this in 1997. This is the guy who kind of exposed the whole CIA role in the Kennedy assassination, because he was the liaison between the Joint Chiefs and the CIA, and he was sent to Antarctica instead of his normal job, which was going to be running security for the president's trip to Dallas. Well, they used the continuity of government network to communicate, to set up the trip. That's also a weird anomaly hanging out in history. So you've got them sending this guy who's in charge of security for the president in that role to Antarctica to accompany these diplomats. You know, that's weird. But anyway, the thing that he put on the record when he re-released his book in 1997, and the book is called The Secret Team, but he said that UFOs were being primed as the role of threat now that the Soviet Union had fallen. This is very important because this is a man who knows. So when we've put these things across about the UFO threat, that's somebody who was deep in the heart of what the CIA did, in removing Kennedy, and how he was very familiar with how they built threats. And now he's putting on the record from his own inside information that the UFO threat is what they're prepping for the role of this threat thing. Now, that was 25 years ago. They've had a lot of time to sort this out. So I think the UFO threat is a major factor in the middle of all this. Look, UFO disclosure and the UFO piece is going to be in the 2024 campaign. Any campaign that wants to have the real edge for what's going on needs to be on top of that and aware of it, because either we're going to get this phony CIA version of disclosure, or we're going to get the real thing. But 2024 is it. They're going to do it. And that's why they did that whole thing back in February. That's why you see, the NORAD commander. I'm sure I have his picture here. I trot him out for every episode pretty much. The only other thing I want to say about that is I mentioned earlier that I wanted to give the Kennedy campaign some advice. The first piece of advice I would give Kennedy is to really take on Biden, grab him by the tie, grab him by the necktie hard and really shake it, because what's going to happen there is the way he's going to define himself in the Democratic matchups is going to be by hitting against the corrupt president's policies. Robert Kennedy wasn't afraid to do that to Johnson. You have to let him have it. And if people are advising Bobby Kennedy Jr. to take soft hits here and there, no, he has to go really. Look, the target is not Trump at this point. His opponent in the campaign primaries is President Biden. And even if Biden, threatens his family personnel and says, I'll fire this person or that person if you go after me, you have to do it. If you're in it to win it, and you're going to have to take Biden on hard. That's what's going to win. The advice I was going to give President Trump's campaign was to, and something he didn't do in the interview with Tucker Carlson, is to stress his economic record, which was remarkable, and which everyone's interested in.
Actually, more than anything, that's what wins elections.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
It's the economy, stupid.
So, you can't leave that out. Forget about Bragg and the persecution. Tell them about what you want to do to get the economy back and get money back in their pocket, and about removing the troops that we have there in Ukraine and make sure that we don't have a nuclear war. You know, the Trump campaign can do that. Bobby Kennedy's campaign can stress his desire for peace and to take the power back from the deep state and the military industrial complex. And he can really take on President Biden's corrupt policies, disasters in Afghanistan, corrupt policies in Ukraine, and, you know, the lawlessness of the administration and the making the joke, you know, making America a joke around the world by promoting these ridiculously woke policies that are just killing, you know, destroying any idea of a middle class in the United States. Bobby Kennedy gets it that the policies that have been implemented are destroying the middle class in America. And that's a foundation of how you have a healthy country that can enact its constitutional promise. So he gets it and he brings it up. So this is, if he can bring that middle class message through and go directly against Stepford Biden, then we're going to see him win. That's how he's going to win. And also the way to expose it is through what he did, just like when he wrote a letter about the corruption of Biden trying to take the money away from running the primary in New Hampshire. He knows. So he gets it. And New Hampshire is where he can make a stand and we can make a stand with him in the state of New Hampshire. Yes.
When is Joseph Part 2 coming out?
Oh, it'll be out very shortly, probably the next day or two. Yes. Okay. And fantastic, incredible episode coming up there. And Miss Olivia, I think we're ready for your super chats.
All right. Gil and Joy R, Ghost Malone, Brian Storm, WC Ray, Dylan, Echo Cat 23, Black Tie, BNB, Jay Parsons, Kashmiri 0032, Anthony, Doreen Hewitt, Norman Smith, Eurythmia's Fun, Global Atlantis, The Buddhas of Boston Sports, Anne Elizabeth, Pinochet's Helicopter Tours, Susan Blackstone, Johnny Ricardo Bown, Undestroyer Harvardian, Karen Holland, Chuck Linked, Jennifer Walters, Gen X Nerd, Doyle Wayne, and Bill, thank you so much for your generous super chats.
Incredible. Wow. We really appreciate your support. And to all our subscribers, you keep us going and give us the ability to do these reports for you and go to bat for the truth on this. We will be back with you next week. Some very exciting things. I want to mention also that we're going to be doing ongoing coverage of political incidents as they happen. So you're going to be seeing a lot of special reports coming out about that. And we have an exciting X-Series episodes coming up for you in May, along with some incredible interviews. And I mean, something very big is bubbling in relation to that. So make sure you stand up and be counted as a subscriber now. It's a great time to do it. And I'll do a couple of shout outs for everyone I see. Mr. Wolf. Mr. Wolf is out there. Great show tonight, as usual. Let's see here. Ideas from Rock. Yeah, the Ideas from was incredible tonight. Miss Olivia, mm-hmm. Bravo. Really doing a stellar job. Predator is out there. Thank you, sir. Bill, Gil and Joy R, Corey Anderson, Secret Spaceship, Secret Space Program. Hey. Tim Houston, it's great to see you out there. Ray's Story. Najat, great questions. Doyle Wayne, great work, Olivia. Yes, I agree. Nevermore, I like that. Fantastic. I know Kate's out there. It's great to see you. Jeff Fletcher, another great show, says Jeff. Cold Aussie, good show tonight. Olivia still kicks Major Booty. Oh, it's great. May the plasma be with you. Yeah, everyone, did you catch the trip about plasma in the previous Feral episode? Go there now, because the episode we did last night, Dr. Joe put something kind of remarkable on the record. Let's see if everyone picks up on it, because I think there's something major in the middle of all that. And Golden Girls out there, Marco Zerpa, Michael Woods, Jeff Fletcher. Wow, fantastic. And everyone, we're in good shape, I would say, with these candidates, and we're particularly happy that Bobby Kennedy Jr. has joined the fray and changed the entire landscape of the 2024 election. I wish him all the luck in the world, and we're going to be tracking that very, very closely. This is going to be exciting for our country and for the world. So thank you very much. And we will see you all next week.
And I'm going to say, we're going to timestamp your little reading of the Lou article. People want to go straight to it.
I could have done a whole dramatic reading of that Popular Mechanics article on Lou Elizondo with his sweated brow. He looked over the horizon and saw the UFO file in sight, but it was out of his grasp. What are these people doing? They think they're going to buy into that as a way of like rebooting Lou. Lou's been debunked as a CIA agent on the make. And unfortunately, all the people in the UFO file, you know, they bought into it. All the people in the UFO world, I should say. And those researchers, hang your head in shame. But Popular Mechanics, let me tell you, that is the most embarrassing, cringeworthy thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean it. Everyone, thanks so much. And, you know, it says end broadcast, but after all, the X is with you, right? Never let it be forgot once there was a recaptured Camelot. We'll be there with you. Thanks so much, everyone.
God bless.